What up, y'all? This is Radio Free Nintendo episode 109, and I hereby dub this episode the Happy Fun We Love Nintendo episode.
That name's not sticking.
Yeah, oh yes it will. Joining me today, as you heard, James Jones,
hello.
Greg Leahy.
Hello.
I am Jonathan Metz, and unfortunately we don't have John Lindemann today. He's actually quit the podcast because people keep making fun of him in the forums, and he doesn't love Nintendo anymore.
So. Good on you, guys. Good on you.
Yeah, good job. I hope you're happy with what your hands have wrought. So instead, replacing him today, we have Nick DeMola from the news staff.
Hey, you guys.
Yeah, good to have Nick back. I think it's your second time on the show, right?
Yep, second time.
Now, Nick, would you be sporting a Batman villain haircut, or are you... just going normal?
No, I am not Mr. Freeze. I can try and dress up like Mr. Freeze, but...
He's Poison Ivy, actually.
Oh, okay.
Very nice.
See, I don't care what Batman villain. Just got to get in the spirit of being our successor.
I'd say I'm more Riddler-like, you know, the Jim Carrey-style Riddler, too.
Oh, that's unfortunate right there.
You want to know why I started wearing this makeup? I'll tell you. No. Actually, we have a lot of stuff to get on today. We've got a big chunk of listener mail that's been building up for a while. We couldn't get to it during the whole E3 craziness. So we're going to catch up on listener mail. And then Nick has put together a really nice list of upcoming WiiWare games to get excited about. So we're going to have a WiiWare preview feature at the end of the show in the final segment. But we're going to start off, as always, with new business. And since we didn't hear from him a whole lot last week, I wanted to kick it off with Greg.
Okay, yeah, well, not. We just got done with the Final Fantasy Tactics A2 review. That's just written now. It's in editing. I'm sure it'll be up before the episode goes out. I'm sure now that John, you know, has discovered better things to do than the podcast, I'm sure the editing my review will be one of them.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed the game. I mean, it was kind of a bit of a hard slog for a review for me because there's a lot of content in the game. I'm unfamiliar with the genre. So it was quite taxing as a review game, and obviously in terms of if I would just have bought the game myself, you know, which was not infeasible in terms of, you know, it seems like, you know, pretty top caliber title, and, you know, if I wanted to try it, I might have done. I wouldn't have experienced it in that way. I probably would have paced myself over a much greater length of time, but still, you know, the merit in the game was very evident. And I give it an 8.0 in the end. I guess the one thing that didn't quite satisfy me in the end is just the strategy element felt like it was a bit kind of weak in the mix.
You know, really, the strategy element was weak?
Ouch.
Well, it's just that because you've got so much of the character building is so important in it, you know, and you how you progress as a clan and you getting all the jobs and the abilities and all that, kind of felt at times like it was more important than the strategy, because some of the things in the strategy sort of the design, they could be a lot, if it was really kind of more focused on manipulating the strategy of the game, you'd think they'd be stronger. Like if it's more about strategy, why aren't the range attacks more weak than the direct attacks? So that kind of trade-off is in that, you know, things like those kinds of intuitive trade-offs that you expect from strategy games end up seeming to get a bit diluted by the character elements, you know what I mean? If you build up certain characters especially, then those trade-offs almost cease to exist. And it's not as, you know, it just doesn't quite feel as tight in that sense. So that part of it, I kind of made me think I'd love to go, because I really enjoyed Advance Wars as a dual strike, and I haven't picked up the Days of Ruin, but it kind of makes me think I would like to play that, actually, because I do enjoy the strategy element of it, but I think it's Days of Ruin's a bit quicker, and obviously it's more pure strategy because I'm not the biggest RPG guy, but it's definitely a good game, and I'm sure a lot of people get a great deal out of it because there's a lot of content in that game, and it is deep.
Well, that's sort of the difference in a way between the strategy RPG and just a pure strategy game is it's generally a little bit lighter on the strategy side for those games, because really the big thing is building up the progression and understanding the relatively basic, you know, sort of triangle of attacks.
Well, obviously, because the thing is, in a situation with this character building elements, it is necessary to incentivize people to build up their characters by giving them rewards.
Right.
and the reward is the greater power of the characters. But of course, there's a tension between rewarding people for character building with greater power and diminishing the sort of strategic hard edge in the design. And so there is a bit of a tension there, and the strategy comes out a little weaker, but it still rewards you for being thoughtful and careful. You certainly dispatch the missions much quicker if you sort of rely on your wits rather than just trying to bludgeon people with a really good item or something. So it's still in there, and it's good, but to my tastes, it was a little in a little more in the one direction than I might have liked. But I mean, everybody knows the kind of game it is.
Yeah.
Well, you should.
After that, I got.
Oh, I was just gonna say you should give Drone Tactics a shot. I reviewed it not too long ago, and it really balanced like the strategy elements with the RPG elements, because you couldn't just up your characters and then slaughter the enemy. You had to actually figure out the strengths of certain characters and play off of them during the middle of battles. And it seems like that had kind of a better balance of the two elements than you see in a lot of games. So,
yeah, I mean, because it's so open, that element to it, the character building, you know, there's a lot of side quests you could take on at any time, and there's just so many things you could do that it does seem like it doesn't really funnel you down a route of perfecting strategy. You know, it doesn't strongly encourage you to do that.
Well, right now, I could interrupt with a quick little vignette, anecdote, I mean, about turning Ramza into a time mage so that I could teach him teleport, and then turn him back into a knight so that he could teleport on top of a fortress wall to kill the sergeant in a mission in the original Final Fantasy Tactics. But I'm not going to do that right now because we have to move on. So, Greg, what else did you
play? Space Invaders Extreme came in, funnily enough, before John got his copy. He had it for weeks and weeks. But so after a minor European delay and then some shipping and whatnot, I beat him to the punch. So I've just been getting into that. Obviously, Nick gave it a glowing review on the site.
Oh yeah, that game's
and,
awesome.
I haven't put in a huge lot amount of time into it yet, but it seems really good. I really got my.
Are you going to buy the stupid paddle?
I don't know, I might do. I mean, I haven't got any particular complaints with the standard controls right now, but I mean, if I really get into it, or maybe it's some of the brick walls later on.
When the game gets really hard, you'll wish you could move faster.
Really? All I've done is play, like, I didn't have that problem,
needing to move faster during the game. I don't know, I wound up beating all the levels in it, and as long as you played it outright and really played off of the different weapon drops from the invaders, that seemed to get along just fine.
I think I got stuck on 5B, and then right now I'm on Extreme 3 also. But there's just, especially certain bosses, there's a boss where, I think it's the 5B boss, where it has these black round enemies that ricochet around the level, and there's like 10 of them on the screen at once, and you're playing across both screens.
Right.
But your ship honestly does not move fast enough to really dodge those, and the only way you can even survive, the only way I could survive for more than 5 seconds was to basically anticipate and project the trajectory as they're coming down,
right,
and try to put myself in a safe zone. But there's so many of them that you end up having like all these crisscrossing safe zones, and they're not actually safe.
Right.
And
right.
So I just found it. I got to where basically my strategy with that was to get to the boss with as many lives as possible.
Yep.
So
yep.
I could just brute force my way through it, and even that didn't work, and I never could get past it. So I ended up going and trying a different route.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. I can agree. The boss fights definitely get a little tough. So.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I mean, I'm nowhere near that yet. I've just sort of scratched the surface of it really over the last couple of days since I got it, just playing it in little bursts. You know, it's kind of nice to do. Obviously, with that very sort of Q Entertainment, Lumines, Meteos kind of thing to it, works really nice. It's quite hypnotic, really, playing it at times. And if you've got a decent pair of noise cancelling headphones, the Rumble Pack's probably actually worth putting in, because it does kind of accentuate the rhythmic nature of it.
Especially
quite nicely,
if you put it on your crotch.
We didn't need to go there.
That's not really. I don't really see how that's accentuated the rhythmic nature of anything. Because the problem with the Rumble Pack on the DS, as people will know if they have it, is that it's quite noisy.
Yep.
But if you've got good headphones that sort of block that out with the music and the sound effects, which are really well done in Space Invaders, then that's not really an issue, and then it kind of all adds to this kind of quite trippy kind of rhythmic experience that is Space Invaders. So, yeah, really, really impressed with it so far. And certainly no less than I was expecting. And I'll try and sort of delve into that over the coming weeks, sort of like I did with Geometry Wars, which I'm still playing. I'm still playing Geometry Wars.
Me too. Since I'm apparently the only person who hasn't played this game, is it full price? Is it a full price title?
No, it's $20.
No,
it had damn
not,
well
no.
better
no,
be
not,
since
not
it came
here
out in
either.
1978.
No,
well, it's
James,
quite different.
There's lots. I mean, I've never
still,
played the original.
How could you have never played the original Space Invaders,
James? It's completely
it was made before
different.
It was born.
It is a completely different game than the original.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, it's, a lot of people say it's more like Gallagher 88 that's available on Virtual Console than it is like Space Invaders, which I haven't played. But you know, that gives you an idea of obviously it's far more sort of different. You know, it's far more sort of evolved. But obviously they're just trading off the 30-year anniversary stuff, really. And then it's a nice visual presentational package. You know, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, decry them for trading off the nostalgia value. It's kind of satisfying.
See, this is where we're going to get into the hardcore game R's arguments now.
What are you talking about?
the trading off nostalgia.
Well, no. I mean, I think this game would be perfectly fine at $30, honestly.
I would have paid $30 for it.
I would have too, had I known. But because I don't have that nostalgia for Space Invaders, the cheaper price point actually helped push me over the edge and say, yeah, I'm going to give this a shot because I've heard it's good, it's a little cheaper, it's not that big of a risk. And so that really pushed me into buying it, just like, you know, like Katamari Damacy did back when that first came out on PS2.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, $20? Yeah, this is insane, but I can, you know, for $20, I'll try it.
It feels like that was a different case, though, because that was a much more, you know, tactile game.
I don't know. This is a very tactile game. I mean, it really stimulates all your senses, and it's just so masterfully done. I don't know. I couldn't imagine it being any better. I think I gave it like a 9.5. It's kicked ass. Yeah. I play it literally every morning.
I wish they would put a demo up on the Nintendo channel so James could try it, because you really have no idea what you're talking about, James. I mean, it has nothing to do with it. Really, I'm serious. I mean, to suggest that it's not worth $20 because it was released 30 years ago, that's fucking ridiculous. Anyway, let's move on. Nick, what have you been playing, man?
Well, mine is not so much new business as much as it's old business. I picked up some games that went on clearance recently, first of which is Super Monkey Ball Banana Blitz.
First mention on the show, I think.
Is it?
For good reason.
I think so. Yeah.
Well, James has some merit to his comments there. I mean, I paid $5 for it, and I almost overpaid. Yeah, it's really freaking bad. I mean,
you overpaid by like $30, dude.
I heard that the single player part was actually
it's
pretty
all bad.
Good.
It's all right, bad.
I'd heard that too.
No,
here's the problem. It's not that it's bad. It's just like the other Monkey Ball games. The controls are just so terrible. I don't know. It's just really frustrating to play. I mean, I had trouble getting past the first world, and Monkey Ball 1 and 2, I completed like all those expert stages twice, three times over. So it's not like I'm bad at Monkey Ball. I just struggled with these controls.
It's Monkey Ball with Waggle, essentially.
Yeah, but you know what? It could have done it well. Instead of holding the controller like an NES controller, which would be the obvious way to hold it, you hold it, you know, facing forward like you're pointing at the screen, and then you tilt up, down, left, right.
Sega.
And it makes no sense. Why would you do it that way?
It was pretty bad. I was really hoping they would give you some other options.
Right.
But, I mean, this kind of game can definitely be done on the Wii. The accelerometers are totally capable of doing this kind of game, and if you want proof, you can pick up Mercury Meltdown Revolution, also $20.
Exactly.
And, actually, you might even be able to get it for less than that now, but it's $20 new.
Yep.
And Mercury, you do hold it NES style, and it works perfectly.
Yes,
it
does.
And it's too bad because I kind of prefer the more charming, relaxed form of Monkey Ball, where the puzzles are very, very simple. You know, Mercury is all about, it's really puzzle-based, and there's like a lot of mechanical elements in the levels, which most people don't like in Monkey Ball. You know, they don't like jump pads and things like that.
Right.
And Mercury's full of that. Every level has wacky, crazy traps and things like that. So I actually prefer the Monkey Ball level design, but, I mean, Mercury definitely nails the controls, and it's still a fun game, so I wish they would kind of go back to the drawing board and do a new Monkey Ball with that kind of control setup.
Oh, I totally agree, and that's actually the second game on my list here. I just picked up Mercury Meltdown Revolution.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Those two together.
Exactly. It was like, I played Super Monkey Ball, and I was like, this is crap. And then I was out, and I was walking around with my wife, and we just happened to stop into FYE, and they had the game on sale for $12, so I figured, what the hell.
Ooh, well, that answers Johnny's question of what you could get it for.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a fantastic deal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm really happy with it so far. It's exactly what I expected Monkey Ball to be in terms of control. And it does a lot more as far as gameplay and things like that. Personally, I'm a big puzzle guy, so, you know, the more puzzle-based gameplay I enjoy. You know, though I like Monkey Ball gameplay a lot, I find that what Mercury Meltdown Revolution has done is pretty interesting, pretty unique. I like how you can split the blob into two pieces, and you could do all these wacky color combinations to enter different areas. I think that was an interesting element they added, and you could actually, you know, control two separate pieces of the blob to modify moving blocks, to unlock switches, things like that. And you can...
It's definitely a lot more complicated than
that. Oh, yeah. So there's a lot more to it, I think, and it kind of operates on a few different levels besides just getting to the goal. You can beat it as quickly as possible. You can pick up these various bonus items that are around the level, high scores. So there's a few different things you can do, and I've been enjoying that so far. So, good stuff.
Let's just say you spent $17 on Mercury Meltdown Revolution and pretend like
exactly.
You didn't buy Banabuts. Because, seriously, I don't see how anybody could have expected good control. Like, right on the front cover, it shows them holding it pointing remote-wise, which...
Yeah.
If you've ever used the Wii Remote, you'd realize, oh, God, that's not going to work.
No.
Yeah.
No.
It's too bad, because that was such a good series on GameCube.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And they've really... Well, I think first with the Adventures game, which I heard was okay, but definitely not as good as the Monkey Ball
not
games.
Not great.
And then with Banana Blitz, they've really tarnished the name of that series.
They screwed the pooch on those.
Yeah, but now it just came out on iPhone.
Yeah.
I've heard it's pretty
good.
Yeah,
one of my friends has it.
Maybe they're building it back up. And,
yeah, I've actually played it on the iPhone. It's okay.
Yeah. Glowing endorsement from James Jones.
I was never a huge fan of the series, though,
Nick?
So, you know, it's sort of... Take that as where you will.
Right.
Well,
Nick, do you have anything else?
Just one more, and just quick mention, because you guys have really been over it a few times, but I rented Boom Blocks. And really impressed with it. Great, great, great game. But I have to side with James here. I don't think it's worth $50. I'm sorry, guys.
It's
it's a good game. It really is a good game. But I rented it on Friday. And as of today, me and my wife have been playing it. I'm 85% done with the game. So, and I've gotten gold on just about everything in the game. So I don't know. It's a good game, but I don't know if I would spend $50 on it. So
you've unlocked all the master levels also?
Yeah, I unlocked the... I think there's like expert and master. I unlocked all of those, and I was just playing them before the podcast. And then I also beat all the adventure stuff, so I unlocked all the adventure challenge, and I've been playing through those. And I even played a good chunk of the co-op with my wife, and almost done with that entirely with a number of golds, but that seems to be a lot harder than the single player is, or at least that's my experience. So,
did you guys try the competitive multiplayer stuff?
No, we haven't tried that.
There's a lot of longevity in that.
Oh, okay.
You really need to try that, especially if you can get a few other people, like, you know, try 3 or 4 player, but even with 2,
okay.
I think you'll find that it adds a lot to the game. I mean, I think that's a pretty major chunk of the game that you haven't even tried yet.
Okay, alright, fair enough. Well, I'll have to definitely check that out, and I haven't really checked out the user-generated content features either, which I'm looking forward to messing with. And I think I'm going to kind of hold myself back a little bit because I do want to get it eventually. And I think I'm going to try and get golds on as much as I can. It goes back tomorrow. So once I finish that up, I'll give it a rest. And then probably when I see it drop to about 30, I'll pick it up. So, yeah
that shouldn't take long considering the sales.
Yeah, my thought.
Yeah.
I think that if they would have released that game at $30, it would have sold 100 times better, and it's a damn shame they didn't. And I think it goes back to your argument with Space Invaders Extreme, Johnny, because just that game being that $10 less mark pushed you to getting it, and I think a lot of people would have been pushed into getting Boom Blocks.
I think they could have sold it at $40 when it came out and made more money than they're making now at $50, and when they inevitably drop it to $30. I think in the lifetime it probably would have made
more money.
There's
no way for you to know that, James. I mean, that's those very complex business decisions that go into that. And
dude, nobody's...
I would say,
people aren't I'm always
happy to see games released at lower price points, especially if they're games that I want, like Boom Blocks or Mercury or whatever. But what I'm saying is, I think it's worth full price, in my opinion. I'm not saying that
I'd object to this idea of siding with James on some absolute thing, that it is worth something in an absolute abstract way that's for everyone, and if you're either on the right side of it or the wrong side of it, that's a total nonsense.
Yeah.
It's either worth it to you or it isn't.
Nah,
I think it's obvious that it would have sold better at a lower price point.
Yeah.
Would that have been a good business decision? I don't know. We don't know how much money they invested in developing this.
Right.
And we don't know whether the extra units they sold could have made up for the fact that they're not making as much per unit. So
it's really hard to say.
It's
not selling, though. I mean, I'm surprised it hasn't dropped in price already, to be honest.
Well, I mean, maybe it has in certain places, but I think you'll see that game drop pretty soon, and I hope a lot of people who held out on it will try it once that happens.
Yeah, definitely.
But, James, what have you been playing, man?
Well, I started out the week on Ace Combat mode. So I went Sunday. I picked up Ace Combat for rental, and I beat it by 1 a.m. on Monday.
Now you're just researching for Skycrawlers on Wii, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Right.
No, I'm playing this game because I'm an adrenaline junkie, and that's all this game provides is just ridiculous amounts of action. And let's see, I think I might have crushed my 360 controller by about an inch total just compressing my hands around it the entire time I was playing. But then around Tuesday when I had to bring it back, real life set in. And I was assigned my hazing project, which was develop a full-featured application in 3 days. So I didn't play any games from there on out until today when... Since we're going to keep this Nintendo focused, Guitar Hero On Tour arrived from Mr. Jonathan Metz.
Yeah, and this is because we got two copies for review, and obviously I only needed one to review it. I actually tried really hard to find somebody else to play the two-player mode with me, and because it's the summer and I live in a college town, a lot of the people I know aren't around or they don't have DSs, so it didn't work out. So I ended up having to review it as a single-player game, and so I had this extra copy that was unwrapped, and I was like, hey, who wants this? So you got it.
Sweet! And so far, I have to say, keeping things clear, I have the old DS model. My DS is actually a launch day DS.
Wow. Mine too.
Yeah, if you have a launch day DS, don't buy this game. Not unless you have extremely strong hand muscles. Because one song in and my hand was already cramped. The original DS is so heavy by comparison, and it because of its structure, they had to actually make an add-on for the guitar grip because the standard design doesn't actually fit into the DS.
Did you have to go dig out a screwdriver and attach that thing?
I did.
Wow.
That was the first game I've ever had to use a screwdriver to play. And
Not the greatest design.
I understand why they did that, because if it was just something that snapped in, you'd probably lose it eventually. And you simply put can't play the game if you don't have one of them. Because it just doesn't work. I mean, there's a attachment thing at the bottom that reads into the grip and then that attaches to the GBA port. So it's not like it's just some adapter. There's actually connectors specifically designed for the grip.
That's weird, isn't it?
It probably would have been better if they just had the one for the DS Lite, and then they engineered something for the DS Fat to stick on the back of it, or just made the DS Fat the standard one and let it kind of pop out a little bit on the light.
Well, that's what they did with the paddle controller, the spinner thing that Lindemann got for Space Invaders.
The late John Lindemann?
Yeah, the late John Lindemann. It just sticks out a little bit from a light, and it fits snugly into a DS Fat.
Yeah, but the reality situation is my hand is like fully extended while I'm playing it, like fingers like all the way out. So yeah, it does cramp after a little bit. But you know, the audio is some of the best I've heard on the DS. Period.
Yeah,
like with my headphones on, it sounded like I was listening to an MP3 player, except for the fact that the songs that you start out with are no songs I would actually ever listen to.
Very nice.
They get better as you go.
Yeah, like
generally.
Like I played, you know, I started and you start in this place called the Subway, and I picked one song. And I was like, yeah, this song's pretty decent. And then I picked another song. I'm like, well, this song's not objectionable, hoping it would unlock more music. But you actually apparently have to beat all four starting songs to get the fifth song.
Right.
And there is no way in hell, besides for the purposes of going beyond this game, I will ever listen to a No Doubt song. I saw it on the list. I went, oh, God.
It has a somewhat more interesting guitar part than I thought.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, I've heard that song a billion times from when I was a teenager, but I never really paid attention to the guitar part because it's not really a guitar showcase song, but it's better than I expected. There are some songs in that game that really aren't appropriate for a guitar game, in my opinion. The guitar is just really boring. And
I was reading the back of the box as I was setting it up, and this is us the first DS game where I've had to use the phrase, setting it up. but there's some weird ass song groups on here. Like, I'm gonna read you my personal favorite juxtaposition: Ozzy Osbourne, the Doobie Brothers.
Yeah,
that one I enjoyed. But
the Doobie Brothers are freaking awesome. That's one of my favorite songs in that game.
Yeah, I just juxtaposition of the two together I thought was really humorous.
Well, what Ozzy song are they running?
I don't know. I haven't gotten that far yet.
Oh, okay.
I can't even. I wish I could tell you, Nick. I mean, I just traded in that game, and so I don't have it in front of me to look. But I can't even remember the name of it. But it's pretty good. I'm not a metal guy, but I do enjoy Ozzy songs and Guitar Hero. I think he's had a song. At least him or Black Sabbath or both have had a song in every Guitar Hero game, and they're all great.
So. Yeah, I want to get to play this on a DS Lite sometime in the relatively near future.
Maybe you should get a DS Lite.
No, because I'm quite happy with the big DS.
Yeah.
With the exception of for this game.
Have you really spent any time playing on a Lite? Because I think it's hard to go back.
Yeah, I've played on
a
Lite.
It's hard for me.
Yes, I'd agree with that. I mean, it took me a long time to make the Switch. I actually made the Switch last Christmas. I mean, it's tough to go back. It really is night and day.
I played on one for about a week solid, and I was still okay with the original.
Yeah,
I don't mind it either.
Because when you go to E3, some of the old DS capture units that they used to display the video up on the LCD TV above you at the demo kiosk, some of those capture units are the original kind with the DS Fat.
Oh,
and the original DS
released
Fat,
not the like Play School one they first trotted out.
No. They were like, no, they never did that, I don't think.
Okay,
but no, they're like the first retail release of the DS.
Yeah.
But because I'm so used to playing with a Lite, because I actually had one when I had one imported when they first came out in Japan, so I've been playing with a Lite for 2 years now, and it's just unbearable to go back to a Fat one. And I can sort of pretend that it's not there if I look up at the TV screen instead, but I mean it's pretty. I mean, I guess that maybe that makes me a DS snob. I don't know.
See,
but I think it's really hard to go
back. I don't
know.
It's just there is a great deal of difference, though. I mean, obviously, you've got the four adjustable light levels. Which is useful for various different kinds of play conditions.
The way it's lit, period, is better.
Oh, yeah, that's the only thing about
that. And I mean, the colors look very washed out on the old one
right.
by comparison,
don't
they? They really don't get that vibrancy of the colors the way you do with the light. So yeah, it's a pretty
Yeah, I usually play in pretty good lighting conditions, so the colors aren't too bad, but that is the biggest difference that I would be interested in, because the weight doesn't really bother me until I tried to hold it with one hand like a book.
Does anybody remember...
No, I've got...
Go ahead, Greg.
Oh, go on, Johnny.
Well,
I was just going to say, I've got enormous hands that have no trouble with the DS Fat at all. I can hook my fingers around and hold it and all that. It's actually a little cramped for me, the DS Lite, but the other advantages overweigh it quite considerably.
Yeah. I like holding.
Oh God, have
DS
you ever played
pattern.
On a micro? I mean, that thing's painful.
Yeah, I do. I played Castlevania,
oh,
the original
God.
NES Castlevania,
Windy.
On the micro.
Wendy has one, and I was playing Astro Boy. Or
oh,
something.
So he's
no,
the one
playing,
who bought it.
Yeah, I was playing Dotstream on it, which, by the way, totally sucks.
No,
I always thought
Dotstream
looked
Stream,
cool.
Man.
It's one of the Bit Generations games. It's yeah, and I Chiron really cool. liked it. I thought it was lame.
Well, that
but
that
the micro
been your
itself,
right there.
I was like, dude, I'm afraid I'm gonna swallow this in my sleep or something. I mean, it's like, it's just almost painful to hold. It's so small.
Yeah, see, I like
I don't,
it.
I don't
it,
care
that
for
that
it.
Is a disadvantage. Although it's the screen's very very nice for a GBA.
Generally,
sure, but it's basically as good as the new version of the GBA SP screen.
Yeah,
because you know when the
yeah,
DS Lite
yeah,
came
that,
out,
that's
where the screen
yeah,
came from, isn't it?
Yeah, the SP
I
screen
the new
is the
SP
same as the light
afterwards.
Screen.
Right.
And so yeah. I think it, and it's which is basically the same as the micro screen. So
yeah.
if the only reason you want a micro is for the screen, you should go get one of the newer
DS
SPs Lite. With the backlit screen.
Let's just say you should go get a DS Lite.
Well, yeah, that
yeah.
works too.
Yeah, that, like yeah. I said, I've never had much problem holding the DS Fat cuz I kind of like the fact it's a little bit bigger on the sides than the Lite. Except for the fact it's got that ridge right through the middle, that if
yeah.
you're holding it really tight, like cuts into your hand and leaves this
yeah.
nasty crease across it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The ridge is a problem.
I'm like,
anyway,
how'd that pass the QA?
We got to move on, and I'll wrap up new business by saying, first of all, this past Friday I got my Xbox 360 in the mail.
Huzzah!
Oh,
and
nice.
Along with Grand Theft Auto 4, and I'm not going to talk about it extensively. I know people don't want to. Here, I don't want this to become a Microsoft podcast, but I'll say GTA 4 is really good. It took me a couple hours, I would say, to kind of get into it. And now that I think back, I think most of the GTA games I felt that way. Like when I first started playing them, I thought this is kind of slow and clunky, and it takes an hour or two to get into the pace of it and get accustomed to the way it controls. And then once you do, it feels natural, but it's a surprisingly long curve. Surprisingly steep curve to get into that and make it feel good. But once I did, I have been pretty addicted to it. I've played, I don't know, 10 or 12 hours over the weekend.
Wow.
Which is a lot, I guess. And yeah, it's really good. It reminds me how much the series is about driving as more than the story stuff, you know, that I usually associate it with. And the driving model is very different from the previous games. Like, the cars feel like you're shifting their weight around more than steering them, so that like you can really feel the suspension, and most of the cars have really bad loose suspensions, and so
nice.
They feel like they're just kind of like it's like driving like a really tall SUV. Like you take a curve at any speed, it's just gonna like almost topple over and then come back down. But you get used to it after a while, and you learn to deal with that. And then when you do get a, like a really nice car that doesn't have that problem, it feels amazing. So
hey Johnny,
yeah,
have you
I'm
played the have you tried the multiplayer out for that yet?
No, because I'm waiting to I've got a wireless adapter coming in the mail. It's not the $100
oh, okay.
Microsoft one, it's a Linksys game adapter I bought from somebody.
Okay.
So
yeah.
I'm waiting for that to come in, and once I do, I'll get on live and set all that crap up, and I'm going to download the 2 Human demo and get Geometry Wars 2 this week.
Man.
Actually, to prepare for Geometry Wars 2, because I'm getting pretty excited about it, I was playing some Galaxies,
yay.
Which was fun.
Yay.
I played it for probably 2 hours and got one medal that I didn't already have. So I'm definitely in the vicinity of my limit of playing that game. But I did play... I was playing one of the levels where the meteors come in from the sides, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I ended up, like, totally going crazy Rain Man on it and, like, scored 5 or 6 times the amount that you need to get a gold. And
yeah.
So I was like, I'm going to submit this to the leaderboard. And I was, like, 126 in North America. So not bad.
Yeah, that's pretty
I think
good.
I've probably
yeah, really good.
At one point, there were a couple levels I had, like, within the top 100 score. But then you always scroll up to the top of it. You don't scroll up to the top. You flip over to the page
yeah,
that has
selected,
the top 10
yeah.
on it. And it's like, how do these people – how would you even get that score? It's like 3 orders of magnitude greater than the best I could do. Anyway, so before I totally get off the 360, I did play some of Hexic, which is the free game that comes installed on the hard drive.
Yeah.
And it's not – there's several demos that came on. I just deleted most of those. They're crap. But Hexic is like the full game, if you can call it that. It's basically a Bejeweled clone, and playing it it's sort of addictive, I guess, but it's not very deep, and I just kind of got tired of it after a while. But it made me think a lot about Puzzle Quest. It was like, you know, this would probably be really fun if you had, like, experience points and magic spells, and, you know, it was playing against another player or AI, so, you know, you had to think about what you were doing in advance. But because it's not, it's just like Bejeweled on PopCap, you know, like on the web, and there's not much to it. But it's free, so that's cool. Today, for Virtual Console, we're trying to catch up on some Virtual Console stuff, so I downloaded Super Fantasy Zone, which came out last week. It's an import Genesis game. And, Greg, do you know anything about it?
Well, it's the sequel to that Master System shooter, right, that was described as, like, R-Type meets Kirby or something.
Makes sense, actually. I didn't play the original, but I just popped this in and played it for, like, 30 minutes probably before the show, and it's really weird. And I don't just mean the art style. I mean the gameplay is really weird because it's not as much like R-Type because the screen doesn't auto-scroll.
Oh, right.
So basically, you can scroll to the right or the left, even though it's a horizontal shooter. But you control which way you scroll, and the level's circular. So there's like this thing at the bottom that kind of indicates your position within the level. So it's like Defender, if you've ever played that, where you have this kind of circular level. If you just keep going to one side or the other long enough, you'll end up back where you started. Yeah. And it's completely, completely strange. And I have to say, the levels are actually really easy. And at first I was like, God, I'm going to blow through this. Like, this is pretty easy for a shooter. And then you get to the bosses, and they're really, really difficult. But it also has this element where some enemies drop coins when you shoot them, and then this little balloon floats down that says shop on it, and if you go touch it, you can go buy all these crazy upgrades for your ship, like new weapons, better mobility, rubber boots that let you walk on the ground faster, don't ask. And so it has that kind of Lords of Thunder upgrading system. Yay. Also, you know, where you kind of think about, you want to conserve your money, but make sure you buy enough upgrades that you can get through the next level.
But does it have butt rock?
No.
Then it's not.
No, the music is interesting, but it's not. It wouldn't fit
in with the Kirby aesthetic, would it?
I think it would fit in just fine with any game, to be honest. Yoshi's story with butt rock? Hell yes!
I bet there's something on YouTube to that effect. Yeah, but the graphics are really nice, and it does look very Kirby-esque visually. Anyway, it's a pretty strange game. I've never played anything quite like it. But the most similar thing I can think of is Defender. But it's a lot more cutesy, and it has this kind of strange UN Squadron kind of upgrading.
That's a good example. Yeah.
I like UN Squadron. But anyway, that's Super Fantasy Zone. And the other game I've been playing much more heavily is Final Fantasy IV. I got this over the weekend for review. It's the new DS remake of one of my favorite games of all time. And so far I'm loving it. Like, it's like a mixture of extreme nostalgia and amazement at the very beautiful 3D graphics. I mean, it's probably the best looking 3D DS game I've ever seen. And all these very cool little additions that they seem totally part of the game. Like, if you're playing this for the first time, you wouldn't think anything of them. They would just seem to be part of the game. But having played through the Super Nintendo version so many times, the fact that, Rosa has a new ability called Prey that has a chance of giving HP and MP to the entire party and stuff like that is crazy. The fact that they gave Edward a new song that casts regen on the party for free is, like, awesome. So far, I guess what I was expecting is that it would be the same great game, but just with better graphics. And part of why I'm enjoying it so much so far is that the gameplay actually feels a little bit updated and a little bit better. And there's every time I get a new character in the party, I know that I'm about to get that new character because it's part of the story, but I'm excited to see what they're going to be capable of doing that was not in the original version that I'll get to play with. And also, I have to say, it has a really nice auto battle function, which the first game I ever saw auto battle in was Breath of Fire from Capcom. But it's really useful, especially for a portable game. Like, if you're dividing your attention up between this and something on TV or a podcast or whatever, it's auto battle is really nice because it helps you grind without having to just tap buttons constantly. And the nice thing is it doesn't just make every character in your party attack. You can go in this menu and you can set which action they will take when you turn on auto battle. And of course, you can turn it off at any point during the battle. You just press X and you're back to giving commands. But it's very convenient. So it's kind of nice to see that they're adding some of these more modern features into a very old game at this point. It's like 16 years old, I think.
So, Jolly, would you say that there's a sort of ample reason to buy this and play this again if you did so on the GBA not so long ago?
You know, I did not play the GBA version because I still own it on Super Nintendo.
Sure,
and they didn't really
and it was obviously a lot more similar, wasn't it, on the GBA?
Oh, yeah. It was an exact port, basically, from the Super Nintendo version. I mean, they added a bestiary and some extra dungeon. I honestly didn't care. Like, it wasn't worth $30, $40 for me to basically have a portable version of something I already had and could still play.
Sure,
I actually played it in college on my Super Nintendo, so it had not, at the time, it had only been 3 or 4 years since the last time I'd played it, and I was like, I don't need that right now. So I skipped over that one, but I mean, visually, obviously, this is dramatically different, there are a lot of very nice gameplay additions, but if you played it that recently on the GBA, it may not be worth getting this, because it is still mostly the same game, and it's only been, like, 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, it was really towards the end of the GBA's life that they started doing those, wasn't it? Yeah,
yeah. And I think they released Final Fantasy... Did they ever release Final Fantasy V on GBA here?
I think they did,
but I don't know if 6 ever came out.
No, it did,
no,
I think.
It did not.
I'm fairly sure that came out too. 6.
Really? I don't think they did. I thought they held that one.
I thought it was 1, yeah, 1 and 2 came out together. 3 didn't come out, which was why 3 was not on the DS. And then 4, 5, and 6 did eventually come out.
Maybe you're right.
Because I've never played any Final Fantasy games, and I did consider getting 4 and 6 for the GBA because they are so well-renowned, but I didn't actually do it. But I'm pretty sure they were available to get.
4 and 6 are definitely the best Final Fantasy games.
Let me make a prediction right now.
They're just the best. And I've played 5, I don't like it nearly
They will announce another Final Fantasy game getting a treatment once they get closer to the release of the Dragon Quest game getting the treatment.
And well, they basically already confirmed that Final Fantasy 5 and 6 are going to be remade for DS.
Yeah, but I mean, they'll show them. Because right now they're working on that Dragon Quest, not 9, but they're remaking the Dragon
Quest.
Yeah,
4, 5, and 6 of Dragon Quest are all in the works.
They're going, Square Enix has just completely gone insane on the DS right now.
Just think. By the time 9 hits, it may expand the audience even further, and then they'll
impossible.
Have back,
Everyone
the,
who has any interest in Dragon Quest will have already bought it.
I'm really surprised they haven't tried more earnestly to make an original Final Fantasy for DS because the RPG loving audience is so large on it. And they made the Crystal Chronicles Ring of Fates, but
it wasn't good.
I mean, I heard it was okay, but it didn't interest me at all. James, did you play it?
I played some of it. Yeah, it wasn't up to the standards that I was expecting. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it didn't interest me all that much. Like, especially without online co-op, because Crystal Chronicles, to me, says co-op, and on the DS, it should have been easy enough to make that online.
I like that franchise, as you all know, and that game just didn't do it for me.
Yeah.
Don't. There you go. No DLC comments right now.
Yes.
I'm still just beside myself that they didn't show anything about the Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles for the Wii.
Yeah, that's been buried for a while, hasn't it?
They released that video about a year ago, like next month, and
it's
that,
having big development problems.
I was in love with
why.
That video, and nothing.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that concludes new business. We're clocking in at about 45 minutes here, so we're making decent time. it's less than an hour, but it's more than the 30 minutes I had shot for, so. Anyway, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with Listener Mail. Oh, Hey, we are back. I have my Perrier in hand, and that means it's time for listener mail. I really am drinking Perrier. It's in a big plastic bottle. It's delicious.
Yeah,
it's
cheap.
So, Greg has our first letter.
I've got the first one from Smackian, and it is, what third parties do you think are doing the best job right now of supporting the Wii, and do you think are poised to ramp up their support in the coming months? Flaws
How about THQ?
Hmm?
THQ, I was not that they have the largest Wii lineup or the games that I'm most excited about, but I do think their overall portfolio is pretty impressive in that they've got two exclusive original games in Deadly Creatures and Da Blob that are both promising, and they're doing some pretty good stuff with the wrestling game, the SmackDown versus Raw game that we looked at, and I don't care that much about wrestling. I did a long time ago, but I mean, I wouldn't buy a wrestling game now. But I have to say, they're one of the few third parties where when I asked the inevitable question, is this going to be online? They said, actually, yes.
Nice.
Nice.
So, like, I mean, that to me, that just shows a certain comfort level with the hardware, with the audience, where it's like, you know, this is the second or third game we've done in the series on the system, and yes, we're going to include all the features that you would want.
Well, you
so
know,
I was impressed by that.
You know, the initial reaction was by default to kind of cringe at THQ because they have such a reputation on Nintendo hardware of just making god-awful licensed games.
Yeah, but you know, their licensed stuff has really slowed down. Other than the Pixar games, it's really toned down. And even the Pixar games have been better. Like, I haven't played the WALL-E game for Wii, but I've heard it's not bad.
Like I know during the N64, they were just the kings of just shovelware.
Oh, yeah.
They also
were the kings of wrestling, though.
Yes.
Which is by default shovelware regardless of quality.
Yeah. I do think, and I was talking to Steven about this.
I like to break people's necks.
Steven Windyman Rodriguez, because he used to work at THQ as a tester, as some of you might know, and he actually tested some of the wrestling games. This was like 3 or 4 years ago. And he and I were talking about it after we saw the demo at E3 of the new one, and I kind of suggested to him that I would kind of like for THQ to lose the license to WWE so that some other company could get it for a couple years and kind of do something drastically different. Sort of like a skate Tony Hawk situation where I wish there could be some serious competition so that some innovation could flow into the genre, because THQ has been doing these games for the past 10 years now.
Oh, yeah,
and the original developer, Aki, is long gone. They went on to do other things. They did the Def Jam, Vendetta, stuff like that. But I feel like THQ's wrestling games have really stagnated, and there's so many problems. I mean, they're like massive clipping problems, like through the rope. You know, like you can't even watch a wrestler get into the ring without his leg clipping through the ropes.
Nice.
And it's like, come on, like, you know, like we had this problem on the N64, and you're still having this on Wii. Like, there's just no motivation for them to really up their game.
I don't think that's gonna happen though, because as a franchise, professional wrestling sort of at a down moment right now.
Yeah. Well, I guess I wish WWE would
go away.
Grant multiple licenses to multiple companies the way, say, the NFL used to do.
Yeah.
You know, I just think exclusive licenses in this kind of game is a bad thing. It's totally beside the point of this person's question, and I apologize.
Yeah. I'm going to say
Ubisoft.
Get out.
Yeah.
You are now officially cut out of the final edit. Honestly, it's kind of hard to come up with an individual publisher. I would say that as a developer, I would say Grasshopper Manufacturers probably put the most effort behind their games as related directly to the Wii, because they are basically Wii-centric developer right now. And they're certainly putting a lot of effort into their games, whether or not they're your type of game to play. That's a different issue. But they haven't, you know, they don't produce a lot of games because it's a small team, you know.
How many games have they released on Wii?
Two.
I mean, they did No More
Heroes. That's all they've released in that time frame, too.
And Fatal Frame, I think, was co-developed with Tecmo. I'm not sure how much
they took the lead on that game, though. And they are working on a third game. So, I mean...
Which we don't know about yet. Yeah. And that's the one with Kojima, right?
Yes, that's the one with Kojima. Okay. And it was on the back burner while they finished up Fatal Frame.
A couple weeks ago.
So, I mean, I think as you know, per person, they're probably one of the strongest third-party supporters of the Wii.
Per person?
They're a small
the company's
team,
five
dude.
People?
Per
cat. Who cares how many people are
it's
in the
like
company? 15 That's irrelevant.
Or 20. How is
it's
it irrelevant?
It's irrelevant, though.
I mean...
Because it doesn't matter. I mean, if what you care about is playing great games, it doesn't matter how many people made them.
Well, they do make great games, though.
That's arguable, I think. No. I mean, No More Heroes is a quality title, but it's not...
They do make things on the Wii that aren't that you just can't get other places.
Well, and obviously, Fatal Frame looks promising, but we don't, you know, it's coming out in a week or whatever, maybe less, but it'll be, we'll see how good it is shortly, presumably.
But, I mean, just from looking at it, you can tell they put effort into it, because it's certainly the best-looking Wii game we've seen in a long time. Hands down.
Maybe.
Well, possibly.
And I mean, by the way, we learned this week through some interesting PR snafu, basically, that Nintendo is publishing Fatal Frame 4 in America.
Yes.
We don't know when it's coming out. I would have to think around Christmas.
Now,
because
not only,
it is finished in Japan.
Not only
but
did we learn
why
that.
Why the hell didn't they say anything about it last week?
I Johnny, mean, I think they didn't say anything about it because they, too, learned it through that PR snafu. They were very clearly unaware of that fact.
It's remarkable.
No,
I mean, I wouldn't have expected them to put it up on the stage, but there was a number of things that they showed at the
they
show
could have
that
said.
Weren't
could have
on
been
the
like,
stage.
In the
like,
same... In the same vein as Wario Land Shaker.
Yeah,
it could have been at the show or at least mentioned.
Yeah.
Even if they couldn't bring it up there and they would say, yes, this is coming out for Christmas. Here's a video of the Japanese version. It looks badass.
Even acknowledge the game's very existence. Meanwhile, the team developing it was down the hall. At Tecmo's branch of the team developing it was down the hall just sitting there going, why aren't they talking about our game? And why aren't we publishing it if they're not gone?
Well, this came from Tecmo, actually, the confirmation, because apparently so many people were asking Tecmo about this game that they redirected our queries to Nintendo of America because they are publishing it.
Yes.
So that's how we know.
Yeah, it's not even that someone came out and said they're
publishing
it. I
hope no one gets in trouble for that.
It was more like, we're going to redirect you to Nintendo because they're publishing it, wink, wink.
Right.
Yeah, it was like a backhanded confirmation from another party.
Anyway, we should move on to the next question.
Do they have an answer that doesn't involve Ubisoft?
We have so many letters here. We have keep it rolling. So I apologize, but you guys preferred to talk about Grasshopper Manufacturer than actually answer the questions.
That was the answer to the question.
So. Moving on?
Yes, please.
All right. So the next letter we have is from Mario is French. And by the way, I just want to say, I say Mario just like Greg does, and I know a lot of other people don't. And people give me crap constantly about it, and I just wanted to shout out to Greg. You're awesome for saying it like me. But
it's not as bad as SNES.
That's what everybody says in this country. There's nothing courageous about it here. You're the man with the courage.
You're a brave man, Greg.
it's perfectly non-subversive over here, to say, Mario.
Oh, not here. Not here. I get crap constantly.
You're a communist.
Yeah.
You heard Greg. Greg is a conformist by his own admission.
Yes, everybody over here likes the NFL. I am the biggest conformist.
Right.
Yes.
You're just riding the gravy train, man. You're just on the bandwagon. Okay, Nick.
All right.
The question. Please.
So anyway, here's Mario is French's question. When I first heard about the Wii's wireless remote-to-system interface, I thought the list of on-rail shooters are going to be ginormous because the Wii sounded like an arcade-at-home kind of system. Fast forward a couple years, the list of on-rail shooters is pretty small. The only ones I can think of off the top of my head is Resident Evil Umbrella Chronicles and Target Terror.
Yes!
I thought it was a no-brainer, but apparently developers think otherwise. Like Busta Rhymes, I'm asking, what the dealio? On a lighter note, who do you think is the worst character? Are we holding on?
No,
keep going.
Oh, sorry. Who do you think is the worst character that Nintendo has ever come up with? My vote's on Waluigi. The name's not very original, and he looks kind of like the result of a threesome between a rapist, a serial killer, and Mario. Creepy as hell.
Boo. I love Waluigi.
Me too.
Yeah, and he's got a favorite Nintendo character. And isn't his name some genius pun in Japan?
Yeah, it is.
It is.
It literally means evil. When I say genius, well,
it's no more genius than Wario. It's really just based on Wario. But Wario itself was a genius pun in Japanese, yeah.
I'm going to go with Bowser Jr., whatever they called that thing.
Ooh, yeah, good call. That one's really shitty. Yeah.
That one's awful.
Oh, I think Daisy is really worthless. Like, she just has a personality.
Oh, no.
No, seriously, she's a non-character. She's
I'm
just
sorry,
a
Pro 666, I had not espouse this
position.
Have
we got anybody for outside of Mario? Is the Mario franchise just the dumping ground for characters, or is there any?
Well, does Captain N count? Because that's quite possibly the greatest abomination in the history of all creation.
How about Candy Kong? There are a lot of
really
bad.
Is that the one that like Funky and Lanky
Funky was just offensive.
Awesome. Leave him alone.
He's got sunglasses on. That's the extent of the character.
He's cool. He's
Everyone
funky.
Knows sunglasses equals funk.
Yeah. I said Birdo.
We can blame that
terrible.
On Rare and their character development.
I love
studio.
Birdo.
Birdo's
hilarious.
As all hell. I mean,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Birdo is original and weird and funny.
Okay.
How can you complain about Birdo?
Here's why I say Birdo though, because I just found out it was in the forum. Somebody said this. Birdo's actually a male, and I was
like,
"You
didn't
what?
Know that?
Birdo is a transvestite."
Honestly, did not know that, and I was like, "Birdo
is a female dinosaur impersonator."
Oh,
well, not that. Birdo believes that he is female, which is why he produces eggs. Didn't you read the instruction manual?
No,
he may be self-delusional, but he is essentially a transvestite, and that's cool because some of us live in America. Okay, back to the first question here about the on-rail shooters. I have to say, Mario is French forgot a couple of pretty key ones. You've got Ghost Squad from Sega, which is a $20 game. I've actually heard it's pretty cool for $20.
Yeah,
and then there's also House of the Dead 2 and 3.
Which is a nice bundle pack.
There's Wii Play also, which has this sort of duck hunt.
Don't
thing
buy it to that.
Probably the best part of Wii Play.
that's hard. Really. It's hard to quantify what is the best of that.
Yeah. I don't think Wii Play is terrible for $10, but I kind of wish they had cut down on the number of minigames and made two or three of them a little more than they are.
Yeah. Some of them seem really...
Well, there's also, I don't know, does Link's Crossbow Training have any on-rail stuff?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, totally counts. So, I mean, there's several, actually. There's more than you're thinking. I'm surprised there hasn't been a Time Crisis or a,
Time Crisis franchise is exclusive on the PlayStation 3 right now.
Yeah.
And Namco's weird like that.
Well, they spent all their money developing a high-res game that could have easily been done with pre-rendered backgrounds because it's Namco. They do these kinds of things.
I think we might see some stuff on WiiWare in this vein because it's... I don't know.
Yeah, it does seem like it's kind of obvious, and that would be a good WiiWare genre because the games really aren't all that in-depth, to be honest.
I think Umbrella Chronicles is probably the most...
It's
the
easily
deepest one of these because of the way that it's controlled. Like, you can look at 360 degrees.
Didn't one of the World War II shooters have a on-rails mode?
Well, it had
Medal of Honor 2.
Medal of Honor 2 had an on-rails mode, which I would suggest someone go check out if you're really into that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know you want that Hogan's Alley revival on WiiWare. That's what Reggie was really talking about. It's just all hushed up at the minute.
It's on the down low. I honestly think though that if you're not satisfied with Target Terror, you've got a problem.
I think Target Terror is going to come back up in another letter. So
I hope so. It's been a while.
We'll save that discussion maybe. So next question, please.
Okay. Let's see where we get to it. Sophia, also known as Golden Phoenix, writes. To start off, I want to thank the whole crew for the great week of podcasts, including the E3 crew. It should be clear that Chiron needs to be on the podcast more in the future.
Well, we would like, and we have tried to put Chiron on the show before, but his internet connection is so iffy that it's not really all that feasible right now, so we're kind of waiting for him to get into a more stable online environment.
And the dude's a busy guy, too, so...
Yeah, he is.
Yes, he's very busy.
Yeah. All right, so, regardless, here's my question. What game at E3 for the Wii did you find most surprising of the pleasant variety? What about the other consoles? Which game was off your radar and you had doubts before the show that you're now optimistic for? Thanks for all your hard work. Hopefully Lindy isn't too upset that we beat him in the talkback thread. Nope, he quit because of it. Resistance is futile for Lindy. Love you guys. Yes, even you, Johnny. Spelt.
Thanks.
J, yeah.
Yeah, my name doesn't have an H in it, thanks. But I do
Maybe
appreciate it.
It's
good
you.
To be loved. And because I've talked about E3 so much, I want to hear what you guys thought from your vantage point. Answer her question.
On a pretty superficial level, not that I was necessarily expecting it to be that much, but it was really nice to see Wario Land look so, you know, they had talked about it being hand-drawn and all that, but it's really expressive. When you see it in motion from some of the media that was taken from E3, Wario Land looks really, really, you know, they haven't just, it's, you know, at first it looked like it might not be that different from traditional graphics or not that different from something like Super Paper Mario, but it's much more lively. It's
yeah.
much more sort
it's
of
a beautiful
than
game.
That. It's yeah. fluid and it's the only drawback is this silliness of it being bordered in widescreen, but other than that, it was a minor pleasant surprise. It was certainly a pleasant surprise to see that the hand drawnness taken to that full extent that they've done. You know, they've got an animation firm in and everything to do it. It looks wonderful.
I'm going to have to go with that too, because honestly, I can't think of another major Wii title shown that was really shown.
Another one that
you could go...
I was slightly surprised, slight pleasant surprise that Rhythm Tengoku Gold, as it's called,
yeah,
in Japan, is actually... It seems to be completely original. Because at first we weren't,
right.
It was called Rhythm Tengoku Gold in Japan. It seems, is it like some new content, but it's just like, or is it just the old games with touchscreen control? But it seems like it's completely original. So that's
when we originally translated the first story that came out. That's kind of what it was saying, was that it was going to add a few more games on top.
Yeah,
of it.
But it seems like that. Certainly, the ones that were on show at E3 were completely original mini games, and obviously that you hold it book style and it's completely touch. Screen driven, so it sounds like it's a completely original game. And as a big fan,
I wouldn't be surprised if it's kind of like. Go ahead.
Yes. No, I was just going to say, as a big fan of the Japanese original, which I played very thoroughly.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd be surprised
really,
if it's
really pleased with that.
Yeah, me too. I was really hoping for that. And when we did that, look for, you know, what we're looking for in E3, that feature we had put up, that was one of the titles where I said, hey, if Nintendo throws me a bone on Rhythm Heaven, I'll be pretty happy about that. And there it was in the press kit when everything had come back in.
And not only were they doing it, but it's original. I think that's great.
Yeah. I think it's not quite as original as we're making it think. I think it's probably going to be a lot like every iteration of Wario, where there's a bunch of holdovers that are kind of reimagined, but they're still basically the same game.
Well, I'd be surprised if they didn't sort of pay homage to some of the stuff that's in the first one, maybe with the musical references as well, you know, because obviously there's some kind of, it's kind of memorably kind of quirky. And for people in Japan or the importers, you know, a few references back would be quite nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no doubt. But see... go ahead.
I was going to mention... obviously, Pikmin 3. I mean, though nothing was really shown. I don't know.
Yeah,
to me,
kind
that's
of,
pretty
I find that sort of mildly
reassuring.
Is that
a surprise for you?
Yeah, I didn't find
that
a surprise. I see.
No, but that's what
I
you said, surprise.
It would have been more of a surprise if it was, and it's coming this year, you know, but it's not.
Yeah,
so,
just
the fact that they pretty much, it wasn't much more than the sort of reassurance of they're still working on Mario and Zelda. Now, obviously, those franchises are so enormous, it's utterly inevitable, so Pikmin's not quite the same, but it was nothing much more than simply an assurance that they are working on the franchise, which is
honestly, in my mind, that game's not in development until I see something.
I think it's quite probably reasonably far.
We got two sentences about that game in an entire E3. That doesn't count.
But they didn't talk about games that are coming out this month. I mean, that's not about the development.
They put
Pikmin.
It in
that's
the press kit.
That's about their communication. No, they didn't put Fatal Frame. That's what I'm talking
about. Well, we're
not going
to count Fatal Frame because they don't want the press to realize that game exists.
Fatal Frame's coming out this month in Japan.
But in terms of James was talking about development cycles. My point is that game is finished. They can talk right. about it to whatever extent they wish. They just wish to talk about it. Whereas Pikmin, in my opinion, may be reasonably far along.
But Pikmin meets their criteria. Would be the kind of game that they would like. But see, I hold by my position that I'm the only person who answered this game correctly because it was on the Wii, surprised in a positive
way. Well, I think the venue in which Pikmin 3 was somewhat surprising. I mean, it seemed like nothing was going to be announced about that. And then all of a sudden, Miyamoto just throws it out of nowhere after
a question. Well, he didn't just throw it out of nowhere. Somebody asked.
Yeah, someone prompted him with the question, but he kind of... You know, it's
he could easily have ducked it to a far greater extent than he did.
That's what was surprising is that he actually answered the question.
Yeah.
That was the surprise. But to go back to the spirit of Sophia's question, for me, having been there, I think the Wii games that surprised me the most, as in games that I had heard about but wasn't interested in until I actually saw them there, were... I started to say Mad World, but I was excited about Mad World basically from when I first heard about it. And I did, they weren't letting people play it, but I did get to see about half of that demo of them playing it, and it looks amazing. So I am excited about that. But as far as the games that that I really didn't expect much out of and I did get kind of excited about, I would say Sonic Unleashed looks surprisingly good. Like, I was really surprised at how interested I was in it.
Did you get to play it?
No.
Did anyone get to play it?
And the Wii version, they weren't showing at all.
Oh.
But I'm just saying the concept, how polished the version that they did show looked, it actually looked really fun. And I haven't had fun with a Sonic game since Sonic 3. So, I'm excited. I think it actually looks better than the Sonic levels in, say, Sonic Adventure, which everybody loves so much. And I agree, those are beautiful, but they're also basically on autopilot, and you don't really do anything in them.
This actually
looked more like you're actually playing the game, but because they're moving the camera over to the side and giving you digital controls that you know, it allows them to develop the levels in such a way that you can actually play them, and it still looks really cool and fast at the same time. And I think that's something a balance that they haven't struck before in a 3D Sonic game. So that's why I'm excited about that one. And then also Deadly Creatures, a game that I kind of, going into E3, felt was kind of bland and not anything special. And having seen the demo for it and really come to terms a little bit more with the concept of it, I've already talked about it, so I'm not going to get back into it, but I'm really interested in that game now, and I want to see how it turns out.
Doesn't it, actually? Quite different. It's quite... It's a very sort of unusual kind of concept for a Wii game in terms of this whole idea of the two sort of split halves of the game, and then the things that have been done with the one will affect the other and stuff like that. It's quite intriguing.
Yeah.
So, hey, Johnny,
those are my two surprises on Wii.
Was Mushroom Men at E3 this year?
I don't believe it was. No, that's a Gamecock game. They're publishing it, and Gamecock was not at E3 as far as I know. I think we would have seen them if they were. So, yeah, I mean, Mushroom Men is a game that I honestly know very little about, and it could turn out to be really cool, but I don't know the first thing about it. So
I think Chiron's pretty hot on that game too, so if it were there, we would have heard about
it. Yeah, that was
Chiron
my thought.
Chiron knows a lot about certain games that I really don't know anything about. So it was fun talking to him because he's so knowledgeable about all these third-party games that I've heard of, but I don't know the slightest detail, you know? And he's a good compliment to my particular knowledge of games because it's very different. But anyway, thanks for the question there, and we'll move on to the next one. This one's from Eric, and he writes, "Hey guys, thought you might get a kick out of the fact that my local mall has Target Terror Gold, as in the arcade. The mall is in Blaine, Minnesota, a suburb of Minneapolis. Also, I have fond childhood memories of a pornographic Donkey Kong game on the Radio Shack color computer called King Dong. A Donkey Kong clone where Mario must jump giant sperm cells instead of barrels while Pauline screams sex. When you get to her clothes disappear. The game was not in color."
Yes!
Oh, that's
if it were, if it were, it would be the perfect first mature game for WiiWare.
I
think Eric is pulling our legs, really.
This is a strategy that I have also employed, though. I have also employed the strategy of using Target Terror as an icebreaker before proceeding to some disturbing, obscene concept for a game.
I'm so doubtful that this game actually exists, but I say to you, Eric, here's your challenge. I want photographic evidence, I want videos, I want some proof that King Dong actually exists, because it sounds amazing. It sounds like General Custer's Revenge mixed with Miyamoto, but I don't know. That's pretty funny, though. I appreciate the... Even if you made it up, I appreciate the laugh.
Dude, if you made it up...
More power to you.
The best part is the game was not color. Like, after all this graphic stuff about Donkey Kong is pleasuring himself, and Mario's jumping sperm cells, and Pauline
but it's not
is,
in color.
Her clothes come off. The best part is, when you get to her, her clothes disappear. The game was
see,
not
I think,
color.
My memory's starting to fill in on this. I think it was a lot like Kill Bill, where that's how they managed to get it past the rating
board.
Oh, yes.
By the way... Just a note to our listeners, if you want to get on RFN, come up with an adaptation of a classic game and put it into porn.
Yeah, no, we're not going to fall for this again, but it was funny.
Yeah, at least use something. You have, next time it has to be Lords of Thunder as the icebreaker rather than Target Terror, because that's been done.
That's right.
Lords of Thunder be original. On the show regardless.
Be original. Be creative. All right, Greg, you have the next one.
Yeah,
line.
The next one's from Ryan, and he says, "Hey, guys, remember back in January when I predicted that Animal Crossing on Wii would be another incremental upgrade to the existing games? Damn, I hate being right. You know, it's bad when my mother, who's officially obsessed with Animal Crossing, was like, meh, that looks like the same game. Way to go, Nintendo. Even my ultra-casual gamer mother is unimpressed with your bullshit rehash.
Oh.
Have any of you guys on RFN played Sam and Max?"
Yes.
Seamless segue there. "I love the old LucasArts game."
I had to edit out because it was long. Sorry.
Yeah. But does Telltale... does the Telltale one hold a candle to it? Anyway, I really liked episode 107. It's probably the only meaningful discussion I've heard about the Nintendo E3 fiasco. The big podcasts like One Up Yours are mostly pretty clueless about it and unwilling to talk at anything Nintendo related. That's why when I start my work week, you're the first podcast I listen to. Keep it up, guys. You rock.
Oh, I'm crying.
Yeah,
you should be, because you weren't on 107.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We torched that. We were good. But I'm going to go ahead and say that since I might be the only person here who's played every Sam and Max game,
yeah,
go ahead and get the Telltale game.
We have an expert in our midst. Please.
They are very funny. They are very, very funny. And they're well. I haven't played the second season yet, so I can't say I've played everyone. But I like to wait till the season ends so I can just play them all in one shot. And
you played the old LucasArts one too?
Yep.
Okay.
They're not quite the same as the old LucasArts one, but they're still really funny. And they're certainly worth picking up. I mean, for God's sakes, I've got one of the old comic collections on my shelf over here. So, I mean, I'm a pretty hardcore fan of the franchise.
Wow.
So,
do you plan on picking up season one for Wii?
No, because I've already got it on my computer. And, you know, it's basically the same game.
Yeah.
And it's...
But obviously you're recommending it for people who...
oh, yeah, definitely.
Have the,
and
have it on
season two comes out, get that too. It's worth it. And I think that their work on that has me hopeful for their Telltale's other upcoming episodic gaming content of the Strong Bad series, despite the fact that...
Well,
yeah?
So, well, I was just going to say they also just announced Wallace and Gromit.
That's true.
So... If you're like me and you really hate Homestar Runner and Strong Bad, then maybe you can look forward to Wallace and Gromit maybe coming to Wii in like 5 years. I don't know.
Yeah, see, I'm not really like hate Homestar Runner. I used to enjoy it way back when, and it sort of just got old for me. But I have some faith in
them. I hate it because
them.
My friends love it so much.
Oh, okay.
No,
yeah. I have faith in them.
I think
them.
It's harmless until people shove it in your face,
oh, yeah.
Which people tend to do with Homestar.
Yeah,
so.
I have faith in them being able to do good things with the franchise because they were able to bring back that Sam and Max after what was the last thing it had, the Fox cartoon?
Oh, Bone? What did...
Sam,
yeah, I know
was,
what you mean,
Sam
I think
and Max
right,
had a cartoon?
Yeah.
Yeah, it did. Yeah,
oh.
Yeah, they had a cartoon on Fox.
Shit, you know what Telltale should do next is Duckman.
Oh, Duckman, he's brilliant.
Duckman? Yes.
Oh, Jason Alexander. Oh, my God.
I know,
God.
Dude.
That thing was
freaking
hilarious.
Amazing.
It's...
I remember watching
that
as a kid because it was made by the same guys as Rugrats. That was quite a
yeah.
culture shock.
Yeah. It's very
it's really
adult
funny.
Compared to
yeah.
Rugrats.
The only thing to note with those games is that you cannot play Season 1 out of order. you can't, because it'll spoil the jokes for the remainder of the season, and there's a lot of in-jokes from previous season, previous parts of the season.
Why would you want to play... They're clearly labeled episode 1 through 6.
Because maybe they think they're freestanding, I don't know. But they are semi-continuous, I'll put it that way.
Cool. Well, I think season... Excuse me, whoa, burp. I think season 1 of Sam & Max comes out on Wii in September.
Yeah, something like
that. I haven't heard a price point. Is it like a full $50 game?
If they're going to release all 6 chapters, it's about worth that. Because that'll put you up to at least about 20 or some odd hours of gameplay.
I thought the PC... But the PC ones are only on GameTap, right?
So you can download them directly from Telltale.
Oh, how much are they per episode?
They're probably like $6.
Huh. So you're paying a premium on Wii, but it makes sense because it's retail and you're
You're actually getting a physical object as opposed to.
Yeah. Well, I hope that they can bring the future seasons to WiiWare as true DLC.
Yeah,
that kind of depends on storage. Solution.
Yeah, they are pretty big. I think they were about 300 to 500 megabytes each.
Oh yeah,
they were big.
Yeah, not right now, it's not.
Yeah, let's see. You can buy the whole of season 2 online for $34.95. I think that's the same for season 1.
So you're paying roughly a $15 markup for the disc.
Yeah, season 1 is $30.
And you're getting Wii controls, which, it's just pointer-based. It's not any different than using a mouse, really, I guess.
Yeah, but you could play it on your
Season
on the couch,
1 is $30
is
for the set, or $9 a pop.
There you go. Yeah. $9 a pop. So it's definitely cheaper to buy them together.
Well, yeah, oh yeah,
anyway,
it's substantially
that's
cheaper.
Sam & Max, and actually I was afraid that none of us would be able to comment on this, so I'm glad we have an expert. I didn't even realize, James, your secret is out.
Dude, I talked about this during the adventure
games. Adventure episode, yeah, this is not a secret.
Oh, okay, I see, I must have just gotten lost because we talked about so many things.
Yeah.
So many games.
And at Animal Crossing?
Well,
Ryan was not alone in that prediction.
No.
Right. I'm not an Animal Crossing fan, but I do know a lot of people who are big fans of the GameCube one and the DS one, and they weren't excited at all about the Wii one because they're just like, that looks exactly the same. Not just graphically, but Billy was saying all the items are exactly the same. They showed almost nothing new. Like, all the stuff in the city is pretty much the stuff you could do on the island.
Yeah,
like the GBA Island in the GameCube game. So it just feels. I wonder if this is the kind of game that they're basically cranking out in a really short development cycle because they knew that they didn't really have anything so-called hardcore coming out this Christmas. And basically, this was something they could churn out.
It's been talked about for quite a while in terms of.
Yeah, it doesn't mean it's been in development.
But yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, it makes you wonder, doesn't it, when you see it? And because I suppose that was the one sort of mitigating factor against expecting the conservative iteration was that there'd been these mootings of it for such a while. And then it appears like this, and then you wonder whether it really is a compacted development.
I don't know, but it's hard for me to say because I don't really care anyway, but people I know who do care about Animal Crossing didn't seem to care about City Folk.
No,
and that's
not at all.
a bad sign, you know? That's a bad sign for Nintendo, I think. I mean, they really need to show that the game has something legitimate, something significant, something substantial to offer to people who've already played the other games.
And of course, the vocal communication is not free in terms of
feature. That's ridiculous.
Well, what's going to happen is, unfortunately, the voice chat's not going to get used very much because it's being sold separately.
Right.
It's not a standard feature, and what that means is most of the people who buy this game probably won't get the Wii Speak, and so even if you have it, the people on the other side will be able to hear what you say, but you're not going to be able to hear what they say because they probably didn't buy the microphone.
Exactly. If they had gone ahead and bundled that with the game, I would be substantially more excited about it because I am a fan of the franchise. But as it stands, no, I'm not buying it.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I can say definitively that I will not buy that game at any price.
Well, they may still have something to show, you know, that that will convince people that it's worth getting. But honestly, since considering it was one of their three showcase titles at
E3,
that would have been the time to do it.
It had the spotlight. They had ample opportunity to demonstrate.
Maybe they were worried it would be overshadowed by their other marquee titles.
I think they definitely showed
it was overshadowed by the negativity around Wii Music and the techno gabber. Jibber jabber about Wii Motion Plus and Wii Sports.
By the way, I made one correct prediction in our feature about what we thought would be at E3, and it was that Wii Motion Plus would be terrible. I mean, Wii Music would be terrible, and I got it.
All right, well, the next question is from Nick.
Yeah. GameGuy24 writes, first off, I want to say you guys did a fantastic job with your pre-E3 discussion. I'm sure I'm not alone in saying I wish you were in charge of Nintendo's press conference. My question is,
pretty good.
What repercussions do you see coming from the announcement of the Motion Plus, especially with it being a requirement for all games after Wii Sports Resort? As you said on the podcast, there's no question the game is going to be a smash hit. But how do you think third parties are reacting to the announcement? Do you see every game announced by Nintendo from now on to be a Motion Plus game? Would that explain at all why some titles may not have been shown?
No.
That's an interesting question, actually, as far as why some games weren't shown.
See, I think if they were going to have more games that use the Wii Motion Plus, they would have brought those games out to justify the thing's very existence.
I think so.
Wii Sports Resort demonstrates it amply enough.
But see, I think you'd have a hard time convincing people that this one game is enough to justify us creating this new peripheral device.
I think Wii Sports was enough to justify the entire Wii system.
I think the potential's pretty obvious in terms of where else they could go with it. I think it's so obvious
that neither LucasArts game is using it.
That's Nintendo's fault, I guarantee it.
Those games are coming out this year. The Motion Plus isn't coming out until next year. And one thing we learned at E3, and I don't know if we mentioned this on last week's podcast or not, but we found out from Nintendo at E3 that third parties didn't even know about Motion Plus until it was announced at the press conference. So you've got eager to please people like High Voltage saying, they announced stuff for We Speak. They didn't know about that either until the day it was announced. But basically, they came out 2 days later and told IGN, yes, we're going to support 16-player voice chat in our game, The Conduit, which is easy for them to say. Obviously, they don't even have that in the game right now.
Yeah.
They just basically were like, we can do that.
I think Nintendo could announce a device that brings you soda, and they would announce supporting it. They'll do whatever they can.
We did find out this week, and this will be old news by the time people hear this, but Red Steel 2 has been confirmed by Ubisoft, and they're supporting it. And at first I was like, why didn't they announce something like about this at E3? But the fact is, they didn't know about it until E3, so they've probably made the decision in the past 2 weeks that they're going to support Motion Plus.
We had kind of discussed the possibility a couple of weeks ago with me, James, and John, that because there had been some minor intimations before E3 that Ubisoft might have had some advanced knowledge of some of the remarks that they'd made about that they'd seen some things about a change in the Wii interface. Of course, Red Steel apparently has been through some development. Red Steel 2 has kind of, there's been suggestions of it having development problems, and maybe that was part of it. It's not so much a problem, but they decided to go back to the drawing board once they got, maybe they caught wind of this a little earlier than most. Possibly, I don't know. I mean, because I think apparently the interview that this has come out of, this information about Red Steel 2 was actually conducted by GamesIndustry.biz at E3. He was there at the time. So it could have been a conduit situation where he just heard about it.
The chief executive of it, or perhaps...
that Red Steel was being shown so-called behind closed doors, but I don't think so. I would have heard about that.
It would seem now that they would have to perhaps show something at Leipzig, even if it was like teaserish.
They may very well.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll get some more on that then.
I still think that some developers knew about this, despite what Nintendo says, because this isn't the kind of thing that they could keep quiet.
The thing is, though, with regards to the LucasArts games, it's not just the development issue, lest we forget. These games are going to tie in with the Clone Wars animated movie, so there's them back. They knew that Wii Motion Plus was going to be coming in early 2009, they're not going to say, oh, let's postpone these so we can use that, because they're missing their window on the tie-in.
The worst part of that was all never that, going though, to happen, is, even is if the interview knew. That came out, like, what, a week and a half ago? Where our new favorite Nintendo person, Cammy, indicated that, oh yeah, I hope they make a quick sequel to that uses the Wii Motion Plus.
Oh yeah, that was ludicrous. That was so...
She needs to be fired as soon as possible.
Yeah, I'm not happy
we'll just
with her either.
We'll get right on that, Cammy. We'll go ahead and start the sequel. We haven't even finished the first one yet, but... I mean, Clone Wars looks like a pretty decent fighting game. It doesn't interest me terribly because it's a fighting game. I mean, it is sort of a Masters of Terras Kasi thing, which my neighbor had on PlayStation 1. It certainly looks better than that.
Yeah.
But it is like kind of like, why is Luke Skywalker, or why is Anakin Skywalker fighting Obi-Wan Kenobi in the Clone Wars?
Well, you know, I mean, like, in the story mode of the game, that won't happen, obviously. But
yeah.
But see, it's kind of funny because when I was writing the preview for that game, and I was reading all the comments made by the development team behind it, they constantly were making, like, these pretty open statements in interviews, like, hey, Nintendo, if you've got something planned for the interface, let us know.
They were
coming out quite bluntly and saying, like, well, at the moment, you can't do one-to-one control, but I hope that Nintendo can tell us about it if they decide to do something
like
that.
Even if they'd known, you couldn't have got it to work. It would have been too... awkward to these games are conceived as tie-ins. You couldn't move it out of that window.
Yeah, I know, but still,
it's a case of unfortunate timing. I mean, the comments from Nintendo about their apparent lack of sort of information sharing with developers are somewhat disconcerting. But I think that's more just a bit unfortunate.
Here's a question I have. Just going forward, do you think Nintendo is going to start actually building this technology into the Wii Remote? That way. You know,
they have said that's possible. They did say in an interview that they would consider
they're looking at all those options, aren't they? I mean, obviously, they may well look at it in terms of perhaps the adoption rate of it once it comes out first, and then if they feel that their strategy to distribute it with Wii Sports Resort and then sell others separately is not perhaps... So, you know, going as well, maybe they'll change to that, or maybe it'll be sort of two-pronged in terms of you can get it with Wii Sports Resort and get a new Wii Remote that's got it built in as well.
Right.
I mean, we don't know these things yet.
I'm hoping that
it's more likely that they're going to bundle it with new
remotes.
Oh,
I think that's inevitable. It's going to be the Wii Remote, the
problem with integrating it into the remote is that it becomes even more confusing for the consumer.
True.
Really?
Yeah,
I mean,
you've
it may
got
not
less
be
consuming.
Totally visually obvious to the casual observer that this one has the Motion Plus built in and this one does not.
What if they just put it on the front, Motion Plus?
What? Nintendo likes to deal in broad strokes. And that's why this move is quite... You know, this move with all its potential to segment the market is quite... it was not something I would have predicted. But obviously they believe in the technical... The technical upside is so great that they're going to make this rather awkward step, and they think it's going to be worthwhile. But I don't think that I think Johnny's probably right. They may wish to avoid any more confusion than it is already inevitable.
Well,
I think the bigger question is whether this is kind of follows in the footsteps of some of the stuff they did for N64 and GameCube,
the expansion pack, for instance.
Yeah, where they basically support it with one or two first-party games, and then they release a whole bunch of other games that don't require it, and they pretty much leave it up to third parties to pursue it, and third parties are scared to pursue it because Nintendo isn't supporting it as fully as they could be. And you saw this, become a huge problem with the expansion pack on N64. With the broadband adapter on GameCube, with connectivity, with the GameCube, Game Boy Advance, Link cable stuff, with the infrared... What was it like, the wireless adapter for Pokemon on the Game Boy Advance?
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
there's
leaf many green cases and fire red. Of Nintendo releasing these hardware things, and basically they only release one or maybe two games that support it, and it never really becomes... anything more than a trivia question.
Yeah, well, I mean, one obvious difference, I think, between this and, say, the expansion pack is, of course, the expansion pack, the dawn of the expansion pack was really Turok 2, which obviously was not a Nintendo game. In fact, Nintendo developed games only really started pushing it right at the end, like with Majora's Mask.
Yeah,
I think it was one of the only ones that absolutely required it. But
they were also
Nintendo.
Releasing things like Paper Mario right down to the very end that didn't support it.
So yes,
that's what
well,
I'm saying.
Exactly.
I guess to go back to Game Guy 24's question, is this going to be the kind of thing that every Nintendo game supports it once it comes out, or is it going to be kind of half-hearted, this does, this doesn't, blah, blah, blah?
Yes. I would have thought that it would be, when you've got a flagship like Wii Sports Resort, I would have thought that it will be much more pervasive than expansion pack, but not universal. It will not be literally every Wii software from 2009 onwards. You must use the Motion Plus, because I really don't see there's much area to fudge it. Like, well, it runs like this with the Motion Plus, but it kind of runs all right with it. I don't think they're going to get into that. So I think there'll be a much greater percentage of Motion Plus games than there were expansion pack games.
See,
I think
to go back to the issue of the LucasArts games, I think if they had notified LucasArts ahead of time and had given them a development kit, they could have built it in for when the thing comes out in the future and just left the current mode in already.
I don't know. I have no idea what technical challenges are involved in that, because you've got this gyroscopic element.
I'm somewhat troubled that, as far as we know, there's only one game being developed for this piece of hardware at the moment. It seems like that's putting a lot of pressure on a team that's also making, you know, Animal Crossing and...
Well, let me throw a curveball at
you guys.
It's
pretty much a tech demo.
Do you think a Carnival Games game would ever support this? No, and I ask this not as a joke, but here's the deal. The problem with, say, the expansion pack is that a lot of companies didn't want to support it because they were afraid that it would limit the market potential for their game.
Yeah.
Now, for Nintendo basically knows that its games are going to sell big. They have such a built-in market, and they have such a knowledge of their demographics that they pretty much know that most of their games are going to be massive hits, and so it's not as big of a risk for them to support something like this. But if you're Take-Two Games and you're putting out the new Carnival Games, or maybe Carnival Games has a built-in audience too, maybe something even smaller than that, but do you really want to go about supporting this or designing a game around it and risk the possibility that your demographic or not enough people who own that peripheral will be interested, and a lot of other people who are interested in your game don't own the peripheral? It causes a huge problem. And
it's an undeniable problem, I think, and there's no avoiding that. I will say I can't conceive of a better way to allay those concerns than putting it in with a new Wii Sports.
Right. I agree with that.
Because this idea that basically from the third party's point of view is like, if we make a Motion Plus game, the user base that we could potentially sell to shrinks by this percentage. Because you're packing it in with a new Wii Sports, that damage, that constriction of the potential consumers will be minimized, because there's going to be a huge uptake of it. And it's so prominent.
Damage control.
It is, because it's inevitable. I mean, this move is inevitably segmenting. It's inevitably awkward and confusing. And, but, I mean, I think it says, so in a way, if you want to take something optimistic from it, I think the technical and gameplay upsides from this device must be absolutely enormous for them to do this. Because I think they could so easily play it straight, play it conservative, and keep on selling these games and keep on selling hardware units without doing something like this. It's actually kind of heartwarming that they're doing something that's quite technical and that's nuanced, and it's like, well, you know, this is going to really improve our ability to make compelling games rather than games that are going to sell a shitload.
And when you feel a game that, like Wii Sports, that supports it, and you actually see what's happening on the screen and you feel that connection with what you're doing, you will be convinced that it's a pretty big leap forward and that it's worth doing. I wonder what it's going to do to the game library, and it's going to be confusing for sure. I think it's a worthwhile technical endeavor, that's for sure.
I'd like to see Nintendo work with the third parties on maybe getting a package with some of their games. You know, if certain games are going to really
Well, I mean, they've certainly done it. they've certainly done it with, like, I mean, it's obviously much, I mean, it's almost the polar opposite in terms of the technical aspect, but there's plenty of sort of third-party pack-ins with the Zappa and stuff in Japan. I mean, right. They have done these sorts of things with first-party hardware and third-party software in Japan, so that's possible.
Potential for it, but we've got to move on, guys. Yeah. We got one more letter here, and I believe James is supposed to read it.
Let's see. Saturn writes, I hate scary game. Huh?
He's a long-time contributor. Saturn. Oh, okay. I haven't heard from him in a while.
Saturn actually wrote another email to us that came in before this one that just said, I'm back.
I'm back.
Sweet. Exactly. He had taken a couple months off of listening to the podcast, and lately he told me that he's been catching up on the episodes, so apparently he is now caught up.
Saturn writes, I hate scary games too. It makes me have to put down the game after a point in time because I get so tired of always wondering what's hiding in the shadows. It's not something I feel I can run through quickly like Serious Sam because I'm stuck being freaked out at everything around me. Fear did a good job of being freaky, but letting you stop time or speed it up so you could run away and kill things and not be scared of them. If you're in the Bioshock world, I know the story and such, but why make it a horror game? I mean, it could be more fun in another way. I guess that's another reason I'm a Nintendo fan. Their games are happy and fun and still have depth. Oh my god! And more than a constant swarm of zombie fighters.
I guess maybe this is apropos of a discussion we had about games like Bioshock and Half-Life being scary, maybe unnecessarily. Of course, Fatal Frame coming out in the near future, definitely a very scary game.
That is very much a bump in the night game.
Yeah, a lot of people are... I haven't played any of the Fatal Frame games, but I've heard people say that they're, like, maybe among the scariest of all
games.
Yeah,
they are. They're scary as hell.
Yeah. And then, of course, I don't think Dead Rising, we just got the confirmation of the Wii version of Dead Rising, which looks like ass, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But that is a zombie game, but I don't think it's really meant to be scary. I think it's more of a silly kind of...
It's more of a comedy.
You can kill zombies with rolling
That's sort of the... I think zombies have had their scary cred kind of compromised now forever by the amount of stuff that's like Shaun of the Dead and Dead Rising and all that just makes fun of them. And they are kind of intrinsically funny because they're just unwitting, so... I don't really find them scary at all. I think if you're trying to make a really scary game, keep zombies out of it, frankly.
Have you seen 28 Days Later?
Yes, I have. I'm not
That's
not a huge...
pretty scary zombies.
No, they're quite different in terms of they're a lot more aggressive than than the sort of shambling ones. But, I mean, I'm still not a big, big fan of that even, just because, I don't know, it's kind of tired. But at least they did something with it, but I'm not a big fan.
Yeah, I didn't care for that movie as much as I had been led to believe that I would.
Yeah, I think the point though is that the zombie thing has kind of been done a lot.
Yeah, and I mean one thing I would like to see with like games that do attempt to have a horror element in them is to them to be not like just cheap sort of jump out of your seat scare sort of like theme park rides. That kind of thing is just, it's not that interesting. I mean, even if it makes you, like, flinch, it's just like, so what? I think with the interactive element in video games, it could be far more potential for something that works on a more kind of psychological level that would be much more interesting than just, the sort of haunted house scare reel.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's what Fatal Frame is going for, is the more psychological.
Yeah, that's what looks interesting to me about that, certainly.
I think a game like Resident Evil 4, and maybe 5, for what it's worth, I think that game strikes a nice balance between scary and not too scary. Because for me, and also 4 definitely was a departure from the Resident Evil series style of things jumping out of windows at you and stuff like that. In fact, I don't remember anything ever jumping out of a window in RE4, and there were a lot of places where I thought that it would, which is creepy and effective, and yet it never did, which is kind of gratifying.
No, they did something that's not as fast, but yet, in a way, just as scary by having them climb in the windows when you're trying to hole up in there.
Yeah, the siege.
Oh,
you'll be watching the door, and all of a sudden there's somebody next to you because they've suddenly climbed up the window into the second floor of the house.
Yeah, I think Resident Evil 4 strikes that balance because you are a powerful character. I mean, as Leon, you can do a lot of damage, you can kill a lot of zombies, the problem is sometimes there are more zombies than you can kill.
Yes.
But you never feel like you're helpless, you know. Even with the knife, there's, you know, there's a way to use that and get away and go grab some more ammo and then come back and kill them all off. So it's very empowered, that game, especially compared to the other Resident Evil games.
Yeah,
And I just feel like it really got that balance right, where, like, the zombies are... You're afraid of them in that they are dangerous and they're capable of killing you, you know, especially the more advanced ones like the chainsaw guys and stuff like that. But they're not totally overpowered. They're not godlike. You know, it's not like the whole game is about running away from the zombies. And that's kind of what the first one was. It's like, in the first one, they kind of encourage you to do more running away than you did shooting. And Resident Evil 4, it's capable, it's possible, and it's encouraged to kill every zombie you ever see.
Yeah.
So it's just, I think they really, when they adjusted the series in that direction, that's why I like Resident Evil 4 so much more than the other ones, is because it's more action-oriented, it's not a horror game, you know?
It's a great action game, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Above all else.
I think that's sort of where Dead Rising comes in, too. It's actually an extension of that RE4, whether or not... I mean, the zombies in Dead Rising individually are about as threatening as a small puppy. I mean, they're not very dangerous, but when you take them as a whole, you do have to make the decision of, can I make a stand here, or do I need to run?
Dead Rising, in most cases, you don't. You could just beat the crap out of pretty much everyone without too much trouble. I mean, it's not exactly the most challenging of games. At least I didn't find it to be.
I think the scariest enemies in that game aren't dead. I think the scariest enemies in that game are people, and I think that's really what I would like to see horror games do more. Not throw me up against some inhuman or dehumanized creatures, but throw me up against real people. Because,
again, that's kind of where RE4 changed the formula a little bit in its favor, is that the people aren't really zombies anymore. They're, you know, they're like parasitically controlled, but they behave more like humans.
Yeah, but I think...
And it makes it more unsettling, and it allows them to make the enemies more intelligent, more conniving, more strategic. Right. So, again, I think that's where RE4 kind of improved upon so many other zombie games.
There'll always be some resistance against pitting you, you know, in sort of mortal, you know, violence against very everyday-looking opponents because of the census.
GTA kind of does that.
Apparently, it's
well,
okay,
yeah. I mean, that's. I guess GTA's kind of like does it in the kind of Scarface kind of way. I think if you were going for something that was quite earnestly trying to get a sort of psychological horror element, but it doesn't involve anything supernatural, that is what can push the buttons of censors, I think.
Yeah.
All right, well, we should probably wrap up this segment so that we can move on after the break to our WiiWare preview feature. So we will take a short break. Okay, we are back with our third and final segment, and before we jump into the WiiWare part, I just want to briefly go over DLC Mondays, since we can't call it VC, since we have WiiWare 2.
Is that what we're calling it now?
But this week looks pretty bad. We've got Pong Toss for WiiWare. This used to be called Beer Pong.
Who the crap thought it'd be a good idea censored. To make a game that's only fun when you're drunk? Seriously, what the hell?
Yeah. I don't understand why you would want a virtual version of Beer Pong when you could just play it
in real life.
Yeah, the like, participation real seems beer. Kind yeah, like, of critical.
It wouldn't actually be fun without real beer, so I kind of don't understand the appeal of this at all.
Well, all the,
it's sort of like the guy game, where it's like the whole point of the game is to see these girls take their shirts off, except you probably have the internet. And anyway.
If you bought the guy game, you're a candidate for chemical castration.
Oh, man.
Oh, that's
friend of mine bought it,
and
I actually played it.
Oh, get out.
And it's famously shut down a party. We had like 15 or 20 people over, a bunch of girls, everybody was having a good time, and my roommate's like, hey guys, let's pull out the guy game, and he puts it on, like three or four of us were playing with everyone else left. It totally killed the party dead. And after that, we made him sell it.
Nice.
I couldn't even sell that game. I would be too embarrassed.
Do you go to jail?
I'd be embarrassed
for
to buy it.
Now?
I'd be happy to sell it.
Considering it had underage girls in it, do you go to jail for that now?
Did.
It's like selling child porn or something.
No, because you're probably unaware of that. Or at least you could claim it.
Fair enough.
Of course. No. All right. So on
you
virtual console
now,
this week. We have Art of Fighting 2 for the Neo Geo, Snor.
Wait, hold on. Isn't that on the collection disc?
Probably.
I don't know. The SNK Collection Volume 1 for Wii was released this week, so if you're really into Neo Geo games, you might want to go for that over...
I'm not sure if the fact they put Volume 1 in the title is a threat or a promise.
Well, we can note about that the collection is all the arcade versions, and they're running on different emulators than Virtual Console, whereas obviously on Virtual Console it's the home versions. Now, Neo Geo was famous for having very faithful conversions of the arcade games, but there are some very slight tweaks, mainly in difficulty and things like that.
Yeah.
I think some of the games were censored also on the home version,
yep.
But I'm not sure about that. Samurai Showdown might
Samurai Showdown was very, very censored in the home version.
Yeah, so the arcade version might be better.
Except for the Jaguar release, which was bizarrely uncensored and bizarrely exists.
Right. We've discussed this before. So
okay.
Anyway, Art of Fighting 2, this was, I guess, still before they combined King of Fighters and Art of Fighting into... No. It was Fatal Fury and Art of Fighting were combined into King of Fighters. Yeah. So
that's right.
Yep.
Anyway, and then we've also got Chase HQ.
Yes!
That's for TurboGrafx 16, and this is some kind of
let me just describe.
Game. It's more than a driving game.
It's more than a driving game. Chase HQ is an arcade racing game released in 1988 by Taito. In the game, the player assumes the role of police officer named Tony Gibson in a black Porsche 928, chasing after a fleeing criminal. Along with his partner, Raymond Brody, they're members of the Chase Special Investigations Department who must stop fleeing criminals in high-speed pursuits.
It sounds like Spy Hunter to me, but maybe without the weapons.
It's more like OutRun from its perspective. You know, it's just above the back of the car, and essentially you're just trying to catch up to the fleeing vehicle before time runs out.
Wow, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. Notable for being on the TG6D without being a shooter.
I don't know, because in the cover art we have for it, there is a guy that looks like he just stepped off the scene of Miami Vice, pointing a gun at a brick wall, which some dude that looks like he's a drug lord is propping up, sticking out of the back of a car, with his partner hugging him around the hips and a gun pointed at his hand.
I'm going to guess that box art has nothing whatsoever to do with the game.
Well, it's set in Miami and in the 80s, and people apparently dressed like morons in the 80s in Miami, so it got that to do with the game.
People dressed like morons in the 80s.
You would know
everywhere.
All about Miami.
We can ask John about the Miami nightlife. He's apparently an expert.
Okay. What?
Oh, you don't remember the breaking block segment? Jeez.
Yeah.
I guess I'm the expert now, though. Miami Nights.
You're the expert because of Miami Nights. Or if we had Carl on, he's from Miami.
Oh, he'd probably think this
game's
awesome.
Anyway, we're going to move on now to the WiiWare Previews feature, and this is something Nick and I were talking about today, and he was telling me about Space Invaders Get Even, and we just it kind of launched into this idea of, hey, let's do a whole feature about all the upcoming WiiWare stuff. It's kind of inspired by the fact that today Microsoft announced their schedule for Xbox Live Arcade games over the next 6 weeks.
It's a
pretty ridiculously awesome schedule.
Yeah, it is.
And it makes me really excited to go get some space bucks for my new 360 and get Geometry Wars 2 and Galaga and Bionic Commando Rearmed and stuff like that.
Castle Crashers.
And unfortunately, Nintendo does not publish such schedules, so some of the games we're about to talk about may not ever even come out, or they may come out in 2012. But they are hopefully going to come out eventually, and they sound cool, so we're going to talk about them and get you excited about WiiWare.
One point about
Nintendo
that,
won't.
The developers don't even know when their games are coming out on WiiWare.
That's true.
Like, they just turn on their Wii, and one day it's on there, and they're like, oh, hello.
Right. So, anyway, I'm turning the show over to Nick for now, so.
Oh, God.
Go, man. This is your baby.
Well, as Johnny mentioned, we were talking a little bit earlier about Space Invaders Get Even, and I have to give a shout-out to Flames of Chaos from the forums. He actually sent me an IM today about a video that had gone live last week about the game, and I'd sent that over to Johnny because I was just really impressed by the game. It really looks awesome, and if Space Invaders Extreme is any judge of where this is going, then I think we're in for something really special. So anyway, Space Invaders Get Even, as the title might suggest, you are in fact the Space Invaders this time, and you will pilot one of the UFOs that's featured in the original game, and you will control up to 100 invaders that are rendered as 2D sprites, and they will resemble the general invaders from the original title. And the game is gonna take place in more of a 3D real life kind of setting where
I think it looks like SimCity.
Yeah, it does very much so, and it looks very cool.
Looks very different from Space Invaders Extreme. I mean, completely different.
Yeah. I was definitely surprised when I saw it, and it wasn't something I expected from a Space Invaders game, because you're used to seeing all of those on pretty much a black background, something really simple, 2D, plain, and this is like a whole 3D world, and you're over cities and forests, oceans, military bases, so there's really a pretty wide variety of landscape that you're going to be fighting over. And I guess just like Space Invaders Extreme, there's also going to be this focus on boss battles at the end of a level. So you'll take on things like tanks, battleships, airships, things like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I have to say I'm all for any game in which you can play as a UFO.
Oh yeah.
I'm like Kirby, the Kirby game where you can be a UFO. That shit is badass. I love it.
Yeah, and actually the other thing that I noticed that was pretty interesting when I was watching the video, it looks like you control the game by pointing with the Wii Remote at the screen, and you kind of almost send the invaders out to attack things, so it's like, kind of looks like you could point around at the screen and control the action that way, and, you know, a lot of the work gets done for you, but maybe would employ more of a strategy element where you have to attack people in an optimal fashion, so...
It looks kind of like a Protoss carrier.
Okay.
If I may make a StarCraft reference.
You may not, apparently.
Not one that'll resonate anyway.
Oh, well.
So anyway.
Anyway,
if you do get a chance, I'd suggest Googling Space Invaders Get Even and check out that video. You're definitely going to like what you see, I think. So, the next obvious big WiiWare title that was rumored to be coming today, but apparently is not, is Strong Bad's Cool Game for Attractive People. And the first title that we're looking at here is the Homestar Ruiner, which it would be also known as Episode 1 of 5. And that is another Telltale Games who's in charge of the Sam & Max series that we were discussing earlier. So... another point-and-click adventure from them, and the focus of the game is going to be more around picking up Homestar's shattered psyche after his life is destroyed. So players will be going around pointing and clicking, and I'm assuming there's going to be a fair amount of humor in there in the vein of Homestar Runner fan service. So if you're a fan of the series, I imagine that this will be right up your alley. Players will be able to collect a number of hidden items and unlock some mini games and trophies and costumes for your avatars. So there's not a ton of information around on the game right now and exactly what they're doing, but there have been a number of screenshots showing off a little bit of the game, and I'm pretty sure you can go on to the game profile on our site and check that out and take a look. There's been a number of articles we've done on it, and you guys can glean some of the information from the pictures and some of the descriptions.
And that should be coming out any week now.
Yeah.
Yes, apparently it's been submitted to Nintendo, so it's in their hands now.
Right.
And Nintendo have previously shown interest because it was actually at their media summit that Steven attended.
Uh-huh. That's right, it was. Along with,
So hopefully they will actually give it some relatively sort of attentive treatment, more so than they've shown to some of their...
I think right now they're more concerned about releasing Pong Toss.
Oh, clearly.
And Neo Geo's back catalog, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What is it, like the eighth week of Neo Geo titles in a row?
Yeah, I know, really. It really is. It's been a trooper. Carried the service all by itself, virtually.
Okay, so...
So anyway, I'm pretty excited for the game. I think it looks pretty interesting. I'm not the biggest Homestar Runner fan, but I think that I trust Telltale, and I think they'll do something nice with it. So, are you guys looking forward to this one, or
no?
No,
I'll give it a chance because I trust Telltale after what they did after they revived the Sam and Max franchise.
I will certainly try out Sam and Max, but Strong Bad, no, thank you. it's a cultural thing. I just don't like it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I do totally support the idea of episodic content on WiiWare, and I'm glad Telltale is kind of, you know, putting their foot out there and giving it a go. I just wish it was with some other property or something original, but you know, it'll be interesting to see what these things are priced at and how consistently and how often the episodes are released, considering Nintendo's weird way of queuing up the releases.
Right.
So. We'll see. We'll see how that goes. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, for sure.
All right. Well, I think regardless of interest of Strong Bad, I think everybody can pretty much be excited about the next title, which is Mega Man 9. I know, personally, I'm ecstatic over it. I think it's great that they're doing this whole throwback to the original series, and they're, you know, not doing any more spin-offs with this one, and it's not some crazy subplot of the Mega Man series. It's literally a continuation of Mega Man 8 into Mega Man 9, which is awesome. And they're reverting back to at least what the fans consider the favorite, I suppose, which is Mega Man 2. So you won't be seeing the Mega Buster this time, and I guess you won't be sliding either, but darn.
The Mega Buster is unconfirmed, but it may be like an optional upgrade later on. The sliding is in the game.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Good.
It's you don't have it at the start of the game, but you get it eventually.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh,
I don't...
Sliding is cool, though. Sliding, it adds a lot of strategy
to the
combat.
I know, see, that's why I'm upset that it's not there from the start. I mean, it's basically a fixture of every Mega Man franchise now.
Yeah.
Why the hell not put it in there to start with?
I don't know. I don't know why they would make that decision. I actually like the Mega Buster. I know it's unpopular. A lot of people think it slows down the game, but I like it. And it's like, it's the kind of thing where it's certainly not required that you use it, but for me, it's nice to be able to charge that up in between enemies, and then once you get in the fight, you launch it off, and then you shoot regular shots.
Yeah.
Until all the enemies are dead. It gives you something to do in between the, you know, it kind of helps the pacing of the game, I think. It kind of helps you fill in those moments when there aren't any enemies, but
you're getting ready to go into them.
Yeah.
Yeah, when
I
you're
kind
moving
of like
through those
that,
save
but...
chambers. Yeah. Well, like, continue chambers, I guess is what you'd call them.
Right, yeah, it's nice for that. And, you know, I think Wendy was suggesting that maybe it will it'll use like a special kind of weapon energy, so it'll be like, you know, consumable. I think that would really defeat the purpose of it.
No.
Because the whole idea is that you have to trade off with accessibility of your weapon versus the power.
Now,
so, you know, if you need to shoot something right now, then you can't use the Mega
Buster.
There
have been some games in the Mega Man franchise where you could charge it up or you could consume the instant ability to fire it off.
Oh, yeah, that was in Mega Man X. And that shit can get really overpowered during boss
battles. Yeah, it does.
Battles.
But in the same way, it's awesome because it is ridiculously overpowered.
Well, there's a lot of stuff in Mega Man X, especially the later ones like 3 and 4, that's really overpowered.
Johnny, those don't classify as the later ones anymore. Bamboo Pandemonium.
They do for me because after 4, that series died for me.
But see, one thing that I still am really somewhat disappointed about, I really wish they had gone 16-bit on this game. Because
I
could do so much more art-wise with 16-bit. At the very least, the music should have been 16-bit. Because the Mega Man series has some of the best music out there, and I think they could have done so much more with it.
I played Mega Man 9, and the music is awesome. Like, when I first listened to it, I thought, this sounds familiar. But then the more I listened to it, I realized they're not reusing music from the older games. They just made, it's just like the graphics, they made new music that could easily be mistaken for something out of the original series because it's so evocative, it's so much in that traditional style. And as we know, I mean, anybody who's played Radio Trivia on our site knows the NES Mega Man games have amazing music.
Yeah, I know. But,
I mean,
but
it's
so
really
the,
addictive
so did,
and awesome.
But
so.
So did the SNES, well, some of the SNES and GBA games had really amazing music, too. I mean,
you'd prefer that they use, well, GBA, I guess, is different. But,
yeah.
I mean, the thing is, setting aside Mega Man 7 and Rockman and Bass, the series isn't really known for being on Super Nintendo because Mega Man X is a different series. It has a different style of music.
Right.
It has a different style of gameplay. So ignoring all that, the Mega Man really is an NES series. I mean, the bulk of the series has appeared on the NES. You know, I enjoy Mega Man 8 on PS1 even, but I can definitely see why they didn't continue with that style. And I can see why they didn't continue with the style of the Super Nintendo games, because most people haven't even played Mega Man 7.
Which
it's
is a shame.
It's kind of obscure. You know, because it came out after the first couple X games, and
right.
So it felt like a real throwback, and a lot of people had a hard time going back to it, I think. And a lot of people who liked the NES games didn't like the way it was changed on Super Nintendo.
No.
So
I still think that they could have done more.
I think it makes sense to go back to 8-bit. I really do.
Well, even if they went back to 8-bit, they could have done something with it that kept the 8-bit style, but maybe made it look a little nicer.
What's the point of that? You know, I mean, what's the point of some sort of incremental improve? If you're going to go all
because
out,
it's
you
still
know,
an
you're
improvement.
Go this way, you may as well do it all. I mean, it just seems piffling, really.
Well,
irrelevant.
Look, we know.
I think, James, what you're ignoring is the fact that by putting this constraint on themselves, it gives them a lot more incentive to be creative within those self-imposed constraints.
See,
I
totally agree.
I don't
they're
see that.
Developing
you
new
all
gameplay
great
ideas, new level designs, new enemy creations.
You are greatly overestimating Capcom's panache for just saying, you know, let's put this constraint on ourselves so we can make it easy. Because they have,
I think that I'm sure
I
that
really
had a role to play.
James.
I think it had a role to play in terms of I think it would streamline the development process.
I mean, and I'm a hardcore Mega Man fanboy, and even I recognize that they're notorious for that.
Yes, I mean, they reuse assets, same as the Castlevania stuff that EGA does. They reuse assets, they reuse certain ideas and concepts, but it's been so long since they made a true main series Mega Man game. I think it's important for them to go back and recapture that magic, and if it works, maybe they'll do Mega Man 10 and really push it forward and do the Super Nintendo one with whatever, you know? Mm.
I think
but
it's a great direction.
I played of Mega Man 9 at E3, I think you will be happy with the elements they're introducing because it feels simultaneously old school and yet new because they are doing new things within the formula within those constraints. And so I think, you know, this is a conscious decision. Yes, maybe there are economic reasons that they're doing it, but I think there are also creative reasons.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that someone who hasn't played Mega Man games, really, the thing that excites me about the throwback element is the difficulty. It's going to be, you know, it's going to
be.
Yeah,
but they could have done that regardless. Like, they could have made it a hard game.
Well, they could have done that regardless, but I'm not talking about that as an either-or proposition. I'm just saying
right.
That's something that I just look forward to, the idea of an original 8-bit difficulty-style, you know, experience, you know, developed today.
See, I think
you can enjoy, because I still really enjoy those kinds of games personally. I mean,
see, I don't think they'll do all the terrible things they did back at during the 8-bit era, where you could only win by memorization. I think they'll probably leave some of that out.
There's definitely memorization in Mega Man 9.
Yo, like constantly, because there were levels in like Mega Man 2 where you had to memorize the entire level.
Quick Man is easily the weak point in Mega Man 2. I mean, it's a shitty level.
Yeah.
So I obviously hope they don't do anything like that. But as far as like, you know, in like appearing and disappearing block puzzles and things,
that,
I mean, there are elements of memorization in the game.
Elements, yes.
Yeah. I mean,
but not
that,
like
so that sort of thing is unavoidable, I think, to some extent, in terms of getting players to have to, you know, in terms of extending the life of the game and getting some sort of challenge out of it. Those kinds of memorization elements are always inevitable in old 8-bit games. Someone that grew up, you know, one of the first games I ever played was the original Castlevania, and that's my tolerance for that sort of thing has kind of been there ever since. But I think that there's still a balance to be struck. I'd agree with that. You know, something that is just laborious, you know,
yeah,
horrid memorization,
that would be like
definitely that's undesirable. There has to be a balance, but at the same time, I'm quite happy to have something that does require a certain amount. So personally, I like that kind of experience. I really do.
Yeah, I think it would be a disservice to the fans to totally strip out those elements.
But at the same time, they'd have to temper them a little bit from the 8-bit era. Because I think
I think the difficulty level of the game is a direct return to the series.
And they're going to have
really
a lot of people bitching about,
I don't think
about,
they're going to baby people,
like,
because what we played at E3, that shit was hard.
Good.
It was just as hard as the original.
That's how Mega Man should be, though. I mean, that's what the series
yeah.
is renowned for, and that, I mean, as a kid, that's
no,
what
that's
I looked forward to. That's what, that was the whole draw of that game for me. I could sit there and play it, and play it, and play it, and play it every single day, and really get a lot out of it, because I'd constantly be improving my skills every time I played the game. And I mean,
see,
as I remembered, you know, remembered more and more of each level, I eventually got to the point where I could just dominate the game, and that was awesome. So
honestly, up until the point of with regards, yeah, up until ignoring extreme memorization issues, I didn't really find a lot of challenge in that series until I hit the early X games, which were probably the hard point of the Mega Man franchise as a whole. Like X1, X2, X3, where they just did things that were ungodly brutal. Like, here's a spike puzzle, like, you have to jump up and down the walls for 3 straight minutes. Go.
Yeah, I mean, those are a different kind of difficulty.
That's just brutal. Like, you mess up the button, you're gone.
Maybe Capcom should subtitle Mega Man 9 with video game training.
There you go.
Because I think it's going to, even those of us who play the original games when they first came out, like, I remember getting Mega Man 4 as a birthday present, and it was brand new. But I think this game will reorient us to the way we used to play games, because they really aren't doing anything to modernize it in terms of difficulty level or accessibility. It's a simple game. It's not hard to learn how to play it. It's hard to get good at it.
No.
There's a skill, there's a responsiveness, hand-eye coordination that you have to develop over practice to be able to play these games. And some of that, I know for me, has been lost. So if you want to get ready for it, go pick up the Mega Man Anniversary Collection.
No, get the X Collection. Anniversary Collection has terrible controls.
That's true. I think the if you have a PlayStation 2, the PS2 version of Anniversary Collection
it's better.
Not crippled by control problems.
Yeah.
But certainly the Mega Man X Collection on GameCube is fantastic, and it doesn't have those problems.
No.
But again, that's X. It's different. So if you want to train for Mega Man specifically, you might want to go for the PS2 version if you can play it.
Yeah.
Hey, Johnny.
Or if you were...
Oh, I just had a question. Since you played Mega Man 9, did did that game suffer from some of the things the earlier games suffered from with the constant slowdown when there's a lot of enemies on screen? Please tell me that's gone.
I did not notice.
Yeah, I mean,
if that were there, somebody should beat the Capcom representative.
That would be intolerable. Yeah. Because that is the one area where you could really, you know, say, well, we can push around any amount of enemies we want and not worry about
and
stuff.
And let's,
like that,
let's define a lot of enemies for that early franchise. Four. I mean...
Yeah,
you hit
I mean,
four
yeah,
there
were
to
be one area. Let me put it this way: the level that I played in 9 had it was this jungle level, and at the very beginning of the level, the first thing you have to do is jump over a series of pits where there are enemies jumping out of the pits. basically, there's a certain interval, but the level is timed so that you're probably going to jump over and get hit by it and fall in the pit the first time you try it until you learn to wait, and. Not only that, but you also have birds flying overhead, like from Air Man stage in Mega Man 2, who are dropping eggs or rocks or something that break apart when they hit the ground.
Nice.
So you've got things flying overhead, things falling from the birds, things breaking apart and flying apart when they hit the ground, and things jumping up out of the pits, and this all happens simultaneously. It's brutal, and there is there are a lot of sprites on the screen, and I didn't notice any slowdown. Yeah. I think I would have noticed that.
If there were any slowdown, it would be intolerable. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
An 8-bit
no
game with slowdown on the
but
Wii
you'd,
is
But you'd
criminal.
Also like to see them actually not just like have it be so that it's like the old ones, but with no slowdown. You'd like them to be able to actually use it, be more intense, and obviously no slowdown.
Right.
I'm not sure that more intense would be good, because it's just going to make
more
difficult.
Be good.
And it's already
I could use more difficult.
Well, you could. There's some sort of.
Maybe there's an extreme mode for James.
This doesn't have to be a one-to-one relationship.
I'm
going to
rock that game.
Intensity and difficulty.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with Craig. I think that there's more.
Anyway,
to it. Yeah.
We should talk about at least one more game before you have to break it off. So.
All right. Well, what I got here on my list is Alien Crush Returns. Which some of you may be familiar with the original game. I know I have one. I have a copy of it on my TurboGrafx-16, and
it's on Virtual Console.
It is on Virtual Console. So if you do not have a TurboGrafx-16,
can I make a question?
Yeah.
Is it a shooter?
No.
No.
What?
It's a pinball game.
It's a pinball game.
Pinball.
Yeah. See. Now I've got Devil's Crush, which is the sort of pseudo sequel to. Alien Crush. Virtual Console. It's a pretty good game of pinball. I mean, obviously the physics are not that great. They're kind of floaty, because not you know, because it's 2D and everything.
Well, you are the authoritative pinball expert on staff.
Apparently, yeah. But I mean, what's kind of cool about this is that you've got like obviously it's going to be 3D graphics, so hopefully they can use that to kind of have sort of more realistic ball physics. Although obviously it's got a pretty significant fantasy kind of element with all this
craziness
going
on.
Like, alienness, but I mean the great thing, he's got scoreboards, which you know, obviously with Virtual Console games or even the retail pinball game, the Hall of Fame, that's pretty good. But they don't have online leaderboards, so that's cool. I mean, if you're into this sort of thing, that's a big part of it is comparing your scores online. So that's kind of nice.
And it looks like it's also going to have DLC, which is pretty interesting for a WiiWare game, you know, another one.
For a pinball game.
What
yeah,
kind
especially
of DLC?
For pinball
new
game.
Tables?
Yeah, it looks like new tables, essentially.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they probably. It seems like there's going to be a kind of almost a sort of one-player mode, not that different from sort of Metroid Prime pinball, maybe.
Right.
In terms of you might have these like little boss stagey kind of things, so maybe it'd be stuff like that. It's maybe not like a complete table, but it's like a little challenge or something.
Well, I'm on the record as saying Metroid Prime Pinball, best Metroid game on DS.
I agree.
Yeah, I'd go along with that. I really love that.
But
it's really good.
Yeah.
I'm also a big fan of Pokemon Pinball. So, I haven't played... Alien Crush was a game that like I almost downloaded for Virtual Console, and then just never got around to it, just never ended up doing it. But, I mean, this sounds pretty cool. I would be... interested in this if the reviews are good, if the hype is positive. It looks nice, and it's Hudson, it's weird, you know, when WiiWare first launched, or right before it launched, Hudson like said, we're going to make all this stuff for WiiWare, we've got all these cool ideas, we've got doing an online Bomberman game for WiiWare and stuff like that, and
Tetris.
The Alien Crush remake, Tetris, that you can play with a balance board or something, and none of it's come out yet.
Yeah. I know.
WiiWare was announced
at the end of last year?
March of 2007.
Yeah, it was
at GDC 2007.
Oh, yeah, really good. And it's like, I think like the first games we've seen at the end of last year, wasn't it?
But I'm just really surprised that some of these companies like Hudson, who've known about this for a long time, don't have any games to market yet, you know?
And I think it seems like they've dialed back on the virtual console releases on their end, kind of. It seems like they were creating a window and then nothing's filling it in.
Maybe they just ran out of virtual console games to release. I mean, it could just be they're out.
I don't think they have, no. Hudson's still got quite a few things they could release, but maybe they actually have finished stuff like Alien Crush Returns, and they're just waiting for Nintendo to put it up on the market.
I mean,
it's always an issue.
As we've heard and we mentioned earlier, that sometimes that wait can be weeks.
Right.
Yeah.
We should ask Aaron to look into this, because Aaron Kaluska on our staff, he's a Hudson expert. He has contacts.
Oh.
He has it inside.
Ooh.
Yeah. So
I wonder
maybe we should ask him to follow.
I was just saying, I wonder what the hell Nintendo is waiting for with releasing some of these games that are finished.
They want to make sure they don't flood the market with all these great titles out.
One of the
classic examples was Gyrostar, wasn't it? That was like they had that from day one, like back in May.
It came out a few weeks ago. That was where we originally heard that Nintendo gets them and just decides on their own when they're going to come out, basically without prompting the publisher.
Yeah, and I mean, if you think they're dragging their feet over there, they're really dragging their feet over here. We still don't have Gyrostar.
Do they even have feet over there? They just sit.
They just lean over the Atlantic Ocean. The feet are still in North America.
you get all those awesome Commodore 64 games to make up for.
That's right. Yeah, Greg, how come you never talk about Commodore 64?
It's Commodore. Amazing, isn't it? It's almost like I didn't have one when I was young, and I could care less now.
Oh. Interesting.
It's almost like that, or you might say it's exactly like that.
Yeah. All right, well, I guess we'll never know. So anyway, that's going to be the end of our show. We actually have several other WiiWare games that we were going to talk about, but we're running so long on the length of the show. We're just going to split it up into two weeks worth of stuff. So, Nick, maybe we can get you back next week and we'll wrap it up.
For sure.
How about that?
Sounds good to me.
All right. We will look forward to it, because there's a lot more cool WiiWare stuff to talk about. So, anyway, thus ends our happy, fun episode of Radio Free Nintendo, and I hope all of you in the forums were extremely satisfied with the amount of positivity and optimism we expressed over the state of Nintendo.
Johnny, are you in a pizza?
Yes, I totally.
Mets.
I am a flip flopper.
Peace in our time.
I am indeed. Yes, I am. I am the Winston Churchill. Appeasing benefits to the Nazis on our forums.
Oh, yes. Johnny, you screwed up your history. God.
Oh, did I? I'm sorry.
Yes, that's hugely offensive.
Yeah, Greg's never going to come on the show again. It's just going to be you and me by the end of the month.
Yeah, well, actually, on that note, before we go, we should say that we were playing a bit of a gag on you, and I don't know if it actually sounded serious or not, but John Lindemann did not quit the show. He actually just kind of sat out tonight. He was sort of busy. He could have been on the show, but he thought it would be a good idea if he took a week off this week, since he didn't really have anything to say about Nintendo this week.
You're just digging the ditch deeper.
Does that imply that he will actually have something to say about Nintendo in the future?
He might have a
review copy
that comes
his way. What he was saying is that he basically just played some more Okami last week, and he didn't have anything new to say about it, and so he thought it would be better if we had a guest on the show.
You had me going when you said he was gone. I was going to try and make some sort of outrageous stunt to get him back, like tattoo Mag on my forehead.
Maybe 24 hours of... Oh, what's the name of that crappy shooter?
Resistance 2?
No.
I don't know what you're doing.
No. Target Terror. 24-hour Terror marathon to get John Lindemann back.
Oh. Fundraiser, yes. Anyway, put away your online petitions. John will be back. I don't know if he'll be back next week or not. It may depend on what happens with Nick and this WiiWare thing or whatever, but he will be back. He's still on the regular crew. Don't worry, so... We love you, John, even though the forum people don't. So, too bad.
All right, that's the end of our very long show, and thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it, and we will see you next week.
Bye.
Thanks again for Nick, also, for being a guest, and thanks for James for editing despite his awful job.
Thanks for having
me, thank
guys.
You.
So, we're very appreciative, and thanks for Greg for staying up until 5 in the morning again.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye, everybody.
Bye.
So, and let's try to not answer the question or comment on it until the entire letter is read,
oh,
because
so
that gets
hard.
Kind of confusing when we have to go back and pick it back up after
hard,
somebody
though.
Said something. So, James, control yourself, please.
Dude, there's no way I'm making it through that second letter without saying something. I mean, my God, it's so long.
I have to say, what the dealio? Oh, my God. Save me, God.
Just do it in your best Busta Rhymes voice.
I don't even know what Busta Rhymes sounds like.
Yeah, but no, Busta's like Tony Montana. Everybody does Busta.
Yeah.
I'm sure Russell Crowe's got a mean Busta on him. They'll crack out for a biopic one day.
The only thing that spares me is that I get Golden Phoenix's letter.
There you go.
So I can't interrupt myself.